జయం విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిగ్రాజాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శరశ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభయచరణారవింద భక్తివేదాంత గోస్వామి మహారాజ్ శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదికి జయం నిత్రిల ప్రవిష్ట విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిగ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శరశ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాజ్ శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదికి అనంతకోడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ ద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోపినాథ శ్యామగుండ రాధాగుండ గిరి గోవర్ధానికి బృందావన్ ధామ్కి మాయపూర్ ధామ్కి మధురపురి ధామ్కి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామ్కి ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి గంగమాయకి యమునమాయకి తులసీదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమానందే ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ బోడీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ బోడీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ బోడీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అని శ్రీ గౌరంగ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్ నమో విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రసాయ బుధలే శ్రీమతి భక్తివేదాంత స్వామినిధి నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవే గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనమహం కరుణానిధి కర్మగ్రాహగృహీతాంగం మాముద్ధర భవార్ణవాత్ శ్రీమద్భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమేవ హి స్వీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవ సాగరే మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోత్సవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వన్నో యద ప్రభో నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వపాప ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖశమన తం నమామి హరిం పరం జన్మాద్యోన్వయాదితరతాతేష్విజ్ఞస్వరా తేనే బ్రహ్మహృదాయ ఆదిగవే ముహ్యందియం సూరయ తేజోవారిమృదం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృష ధామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్తభుహగం సత్యం వరం ధీమహి ధర్మ ప్రోజితకైదవోత్రవరమో నర్మత్సరాణం సదా వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివదం తాపత్రయోన్మూలనం శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాముని హృదయ కింబాధరైరీశ్వర సద్యో హృదయ శుశ్రూషుభీ తల్క్షణా నిగమకల్పదరోర్గలితం ఫలం శుకముఖాదమృతద్రవ సంయుధం పిబద భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహోరసియా భువి భావుకాః సచ్చిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోల్పత్యాదిహేతవే తాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నమః యం ప్రవ్రజందమనువేదమభేదకృత్యం ద్వైవాయనో విరహగాదరమాజ్యుహావ పుత్రైరిదన్మయదయతరవోభినీదూతం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిమానదోస్మి యస్వానుభావమహిలశ్రుతిసారమేకం అధ్యాత్మదీపమతిథిదీర్షదాం తమంధం సంసారిణాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనుముపయామి గురుం మునీనాం నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తదో జయముదీరయే కమనీయ కిశోరముగ్ధమూర్తే కళవేణుకునిదాదానందోః మమ వాజి విజృంభదాం మురారే మధురీం నక్కనిగావి కావిగావి నమ ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూదరే శ్రీమతే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామినిధి నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతీ దేవే గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్యదేశధారిణి శ్రీమల్ గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమ వందే నందం వ్రజశ్రీణాం పాదరేణుమభీష్ణశ వ్యాసం హరిగదోద్గీతం పునాది భువనత్రయం గోపీ చరణారవింద పరమానువే నమ పీతాంబరం గరవిరాజిల శంఖచక్రం కౌమోదయీ సరసిజం కరుణాసముద్రం రాధాసహాయమతిసుందరమందహాసం పాదాలయేశమనిశం హృది భావయామి కోమళం కూజయన్ వేణుం శ్యామళోయం కుమారయ వేదవేదివరం బ్రహ్మ భాసదాంబురదో మమ மூகம் கரோதி வாசாலம் பங்கும் லங்கை வீரிம் யற்கிருபாகமஹம் வந்தே பரமானந்தமாகவம் ஸ்ரீகிருஷ்ணாய நம ஸ்ரீமதி ராதிகாயே நம சர்வத்ர கோவிந்த நாம சங்கீர்த்தனம் கோவிந்த கோவிந்த ஓம் பார்த்தாய பிரதிபோதிதம் பகவதம் நாராயணேன ஸ்வயம் வியாசேன கிரதிதம் புராண முனிநாம் மத்யே மகாபாரதம் அத்வைதாமிரத வர்ஷிணி பகவதி அஷ்டாதசாத்யாயினி அம்ப த்வாமனு சந்ததாமி பகவத்கீதே பவத்வேஷிணி நமோஸ்து வியாச விஷால புத்தே புல்லாரவிந்தாயத பத்ர நேத்ர ஏன த்வயா பாரத தைல பூர்ண பிரஜ்வாலிதோ ஜானமய பிரதீப பிரபஞ்ச பாரிஜாதாய தோத்ரவேத்ரைகவாணை ஞானமுத்ராய கிருஷ்ணாய கீதாமிருததுஹே நம சர்வோபனிஷதோ காவோ துர்கா கோபால நந்தன பார்த்தோ வல்ச சுதீர் போக்தா துக்தம் கீதாமிருதம் மகத் வசுதேவ சுதம் தேவம் கம்சச்சானூரமர்தனம் தேவகீ பரமானந்தம் கிருஷ்ணம் வந்தே ஜகத்குரும் ீஷ்மிரோணாஜேதலாந்தாரீலோல்பலாங்கிராஹவதி கிருபேணவஹினி கர்ணேன வேலாக்குல அஸ்வத்மா விகர்ணோரமகரா துரியோதனாவர்த்தினி சுதீர்ணு பாண்டவைரணநதி கைவர்த்தகேஷவ பாராசரவஜரோஜமோலம் கீதார்த்தகந்தோல்கடம் நானாக்கியானகேசரம் ஹரிகதா சம்போதனாபோதிதம் லோகை சஜனஷல்பதைரஹரஹ பேவீயமானம் முத பூயாபாரத பங்கஜக்கலிமல பிரத்வம்சினஸ்ரேயசே முகம் கரோதி வாசாலம் பங்கும் லங்கைரேகிரிம் யற்கிருபாதமஹம் வந்தே பரமானந்த மாதவம் எம் பிரம்மா முருணேந்திர ருத்ரமருதஸ்துன்வந்தி திவ்யே சவயம் வேதை சாங்கபதை க்ரமோபனிஷதேர் காயந்தியம் சமகாஹ ோவிந்தமசீர்த்தனோவிந்தோந்தபிரவிஷமாஜமிமாசுத்தம்ஜீவயசாம்ஷாஸ்திரோணாம் பூதே மஹத்பிரியை மா புரோ விபோர்தர்மாயூஷு பூருஷ புங்கே குணான் ஷோடசோடசாத்மகம் சோலம் கிருஷிஷ்ட பகவான் மயாம்சி மே பிரஹ்லாத நாரத பராசர புண்டரீகம் வியாசம் வைஷுகுஷவுனகாபியான் வசிஷ்ட விபீஷணான்யன் புண்ணியானி மான் பரமபாகவதான் ஸ்மராமி கஜேந்திர ஸ்துதி வாட் வி ஆர் டிஸ்கஸிங் லாஸ்ட் கிளாஸ் we will go through that last verse once again what we talked about the 18th verse almalma japta grahavitta janeshu sakte dushprabanaaya guna sanga vivarjidaya muktaalmavi sukhadaye paribhavidaya jnanaalmane bhagavate nama ishwaraya that was the verse the last verse we discussed there's a lot more things on that verse to understand Gajendra says to Krishna, that Krishna is present as Antaryami inside everybody, and as Antaryami he controls our life throughout. From all the time he is with us, and he controls our life. But at the same time, He is present throughout the creation, all over. How they say like that? They say that is, Brahman is present everywhere and it's even outside the creation. In other words, everything is within Brahman. Nothing else exists outside. Then, Upanishad says, remaining inside us, he is controlling every one of us. Every jiva is controlled by the Antaryami from inside. How? Ordinary jivas have no interest in the Antaryami. Ordinary jivas have no interest in the Antaryami. So, depending upon their vasanas, vasana prabhavam it's called, they experience happiness and distress and they take different species wombs. They take birth in different wombs and they will keep on rotating like this. We go through 8.4 million different species. This is why it's spoken like that. To make us aware that we as consciousness, bodham, that's our original identity. We will move from one species to another species, and in each species we will develop vasanas. In every species we will develop vasanas. So while we are going through different bodies, whether to experience happiness or distress is depending on the results of our activities in different bodies, what we have done. That is why that thing comes, karma bharadadava, one who gives the results of one's own karma. So, according to the karma bharam, or the result of our actions, when it comes back to us, and we get controlled in that way by the Antaryami, through the karma bharam, the results of our karma comes back to us, and that's being controlled by the Antaryami. Accordingly, you feel happiness and distress in life. So, these results of our activities, punyam, papam, pious and sinful things, depends on the time also. When does that mature? Each of our activities, when does that results come? So, that is why we have to understand a little bit more in detail how that system works. We talked a little last class, but let me explain that a little bit more. By nature, by birth itself, we have a disposition in sattvagunam or rajogunam or tamogunam. Within our nature it is there. While we are born, we come with that. How does that happen? It happens like this, that the karma what we do, all the karma what we do in different lifetimes, what we have done, all the karma is put into these three categories, sattvikam, rajasam, tamasam. So, depending on the type of karma we have done, the vasanas will be created on the basis of that. Satya vasana, rajasa vasana, tamasa vasana. Three types of vasanas we will develop according to the karma we do. This is why karma is a big topic in the Veda. Why karma, which is not there in any other religious, they will say, oh, you do good things, you'll get good results and all. But beyond than that, the depth of understanding of karma, what is given in the Veda, doesn't come anywhere else. So, normally what happens is that if you do sattvikam activities, you will develop sattvika vasana. If you develop rajasic activities, you develop rajasa vasana. And similarly, if you do tamasic activities, you develop tamasic vasanas inside. It is these vasanas that we have created within us that comes out in the form of modes of nature in us. Yeah, it comes out as modes of nature in us. So, when we say, when somebody is born in the mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance, what that means is, the karmam that you have done in the previous lives, it comes as vasanas, and that karmam is under the three modes. So, the vasanas that comes under three modes, that is your modes of nature. Do you understand what it means? Yeah? That means the karmams, what we have done previously, that comes in this life. Which life and all, we can't say that. It is there in our subtle body. It is there in our subtle body, those vasanas. And then vasanas will fall into one of these three, satvikam, rajasam, tamasam. So it is that vasana that comes out within us in every person as his swabhava. We call it a swabhavam, isn't it? Krishna says, swabhava vijayam shauryam sattvanja samadarshanam. In the Ekadasham, you will see that. Yeah. So what is swabhavam? Swabhavam means nothing but the vasanas you have created through your karma under these three modes of nature, which matures and comes out in this lifetime, and that is our swabhava. And it is this vasana is what is called a swabhava. And it is the same thing in Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna calls it as prakriti in a person. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha. Krishna says there, isn't it? So what is prakriti? Prakriti is nothing but this swabhavam in a person, which has been created by the vasanas in that person, which comes under the three modes of nature. So, satya vasana, if you have, you will be in satogunam. Rajasa vasana you have, you will be in rajasogunam. Tamasik vasana, if you have, you will be in tamogunam. And there is nothing you can do about it, because it has been created previously, and it is coming out now within us. So that's one thing to understand. And then, apart from that, when the vasanas become matured and they are operating through us, where did the vasanas come from? Vasanas came from karma. Is it not? Kunti Devi said that. Avidya kama karma bhi, she said, isn't it? So initially there is avidya inside us. That avidya created this kama inside us, desires. How did avidya create kama? That question we have to think about it. So avidya, what avidya does is, avidya means, the problem here is that all the English words, none of them actually carry the meaning what is spoken in the Sanskrit words. Avidya, you call it as ignorance. Tamogunam also you call it as ignorance. Whereas avidya and tamogunam is totally a lot of difference between the two. So unfortunately, there is no equivalent English words for expressing those things properly. Anyway, all we can say is, avidya in a person, where it is called moola avidya. Moola avidya means, due to the influence of maya, originally, we have lost our spiritual connection. In other words, strictly speaking, we are not jivas, we are not the body either. Originally, our identity is same as Krishna's. Andaryami inside us, who is Sachidananda Brahman, Sachidananda, Satya, Chitta, Anandam. This is our identity, actual identity, is Sachidananda. So, first we lost that Sachidanandam state. When we lost our Sachidanandam state, what has happened is, as you know, in the subtle body, we have mind, intelligence, ahangaram and chittam, the four things, which is inside the subtle body. Outside the subtle body is the andaryami. Andaryami is Krishna. So, Krishna means bodham, awareness, prakasham it is. Bodha prakasham or jnana prakasham, it's called knowledge or consciousness, in other words. It's the same in Bhagavatam, they addressed in a different way. Vadandita tattvavidam tattvam yat jnanam advayam. Jnanam, that is the truth, Krishna, in the second chapter. That jnanam, which is addressed as Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Brahmedi, Paramatmedi, Bhagavan idi shabjade. But the tattvam is jnanam, advayat jnanam. So this advayat jnanam is Krishna. If you call it as Bhagavan, it is Krishna. It is the same as Brahman and it is the same as Paramatma. So, whichever way, jnanis calls it as Brahman, yogis calls it as Paramatma, and devotees calls it as Bhagavan. But Vastu is one. One Vastu, which is Jnanam, Advaya Jnanam, Vadandira Tattvaidam Tattvam Yat Jnanam, that Jnanam is addressed by three different ways depending on the Jnanis or Yogis or devotees. They address that same one truth in three different ways. So that Advaya Jnanam inside us, which is Krishna inside us, or Brahma, Sachidananda Brahman, or Paramatma, whichever way we call it, it's the same thing. So Paramatma reflects in the subtle body. When it reflects in the subtle body, in the vasanas, that is where vasanas are stored in the chittam. Chittam is the storage house of all our vasanas from several lifetimes, which is present in everybody within them. Then there is the ahangaram thing. Ahangaram has come from Maya. Ahangaram has come from Maya. So in ahangaram, when the Antaryami reflects in the ahangaram, ahangaram becomes jiva. Think about that. You see, ahangaram has come from Maya. Antaryami is Krishna. Inside us, which is addressed as Paramatma. So Paramatma, when it enters into ahangaram, ahangaram becomes jiva. Or in other words, in jiva, Maya is there and Krishna is also there. You get the point. Whereas Antaryami is purely Krishna. Whereas in jiva, both are present. Ahangaram is a product of Maya. You know in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ashtada Prakriti, Bhumirabhanula Vayu, Khammano Buddhi Revaja, Ahangaram. Binna Prakriti Ashtada. Ashtada Prakriti. So Ashtada Prakriti includes Ahangaram. So Ahangaram is a product of Maya. And when Antaryami outside the subtle body, Antaryami is always outside the subtle body because Antaryami is not affected by anything what goes on inside us. But Antaryami, when it enters into the subtle body, it comes into contact with Ahangaram, and when Antaryami enters into Ahangaram, Ahangaram turns out to be Jiva. So that is when Jiva is born. This is according to Vedantam and the Upanishads. Puranic way of saying is Jiva has fallen down from the spiritual world and all that, which normally you can see how devotees talk about that, that Jiva has fallen from the spiritual world. So in Vedantam, it's a lot more clarity on these things. It will say like this, that the Jiva is nothing but a product of Ahangaram on one side and Antaryami on the other side. Ahangaram and Antaryami, when they come together, from that Jiva is born. So that is what we call it as Jiva, right? So it is this Jiva who is enjoying and suffering. Antaryami has nothing to do with that, right? So we are talking about this. So vasanas in three modes: Satvagunam, Rajagunam, Tamogunam. So if you have Satya vasana inside, then you will be born in Satvagunam. If you have Rajasa vasana inside, you will be born in Rajagunam. And if you have Tamasic vasana inside, you will be born in Tamogunam. And you will have that vasana will be driving you throughout your life. And that it is based on that you develop the karma. Accordingly, your karma vasana will go in that direction. So what will happen now is that the these three vasanas inside us, Satvagunam, Rajagunam and Tamogunam, everyone will have a little bit of everything, but one will be much stronger than the other two out of the three. So that is what will be his nature or his svabhavam or his prakriti. So whether you call it as vasana, you call it as svabhavam, or you call it as prakriti, it's one and the same thing. It's not different. They're one and the same thing. Right? Okay. So, so this svabhavam, based on that, it is decided when you should experience the results of your activities from previous lives. So, suppose there is satogunam in the society or in the world, because gunam is everywhere. These three modes are present in everywhere. When there is satogunam present, suppose you have satogunam in you, that's the time you will experience your results of your pious activities. These two things have to come together. That means there is satogunam present in the world, and at the same time you also have satogunam inside us as your swabhava, then you will experience the result of all your pious activities at that time. At that time. Now, we were talking about karma. Avidya, kama, karma. Yeah? Now, how did karma come from avidya? That's the main thing. The way it happens is that the antaryami inside, who is controlling everything from within, we, due to the avidya inside, avidya affected us in two ways. What we call it as, first you lost your spiritual connection. That means your relationship with the antaryami, you have lost it due to avidya inside us. Yeah? And that comes from maya. Maya is behind that. Each one of us, we lose our spiritual nature and we have forgotten that we have such a strong relationship with antaryami, with Krishna inside, and we broke away from that. Number one. When we lost that, secondly, what happened was, we had to, jiva was born, and jiva started identifying with the body. So, which is called vyaktitva abhimanam or deha abhimanam, whichever way we call it, personality was born at that time. So, these two things, personality, the creation of the personality, or feeling that I am a person. With that, what happens? You are identifying with the body. So, bodily identity began with that. Initially, we lost our original spiritual identity. That is the first thing. Secondly, what happens? You started identifying with the body. Dehabhimana. First, you lost your spiritual identity and then you identified with the body. Two levels, right? And this is what is called avaranam and vikshepam. Avaranam is the one where you are losing your spiritual identity. Vikshepam is the one when you are identifying with the body. In all these things, you have to use the words that is used in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. English translations just won't work. I can give you so many examples where English words cannot convey the actual meaning of the words in the Vedam or words in the Upanishads. So this is why when people should realize this, that this translation is not the answer to the problem. You are not, for example, simply take this one. Satogunam, rajogunam, tamogunam. Three modes, right? Translation is goodness, passion and ignorance. That is the words used in the Bhagavad Gita. These three words are nowhere near to the actual meaning of satogunam, rajogunam and tamogunam. When you understand satogunam, rajogunam, tamogunam properly, then you realize it, how poor these words are, which one, goodness, passion and ignorance, to convey the meaning of satogunam, rajogunam and tamogunam. And that is true with everything else. In the all the terminology in the Vedam, that is why it's so important to understand those words and able to capture the real meaning of these words and able to understand it. Otherwise, English words, if you keep on using them, goodness, passion and ignorance, it will not give you the real message, what is being meant by the Shastra. So the avidya started first and then kama came. Kama means desires. Avidya kama karma ghi, it says, isn't it? So kama came When did kamam come? Kamam came when jiva identified with the body. Jiva was born, as I said before, from jiva is a combination of two things. One, your ahankaram, which is a product of maya. The other one is Krishna, the Antaryami, who is reflecting in the ahankaram. And when Antaryami Krishna is reflecting in the ahankaram, he is called the jiva. In other words, jiva is a combination of both your ahankaram, which is maya, and also the chaitanyam, which is Krishna. Krishna is a chaitanyam, ahankaram is maya. When they come together, it is jiva. That's the way to understand. So that jiva, the moment it becomes jiva, it means it is identifying with the body. And that is where we are now. We are in that state. We are identifying with the body, and therefore we are jivas. We will remain as jivas as long as we are identifying with the body. And when we are identifying with the body, immediately what happens is we realize it, that this is all the problem with the bodily identity. With bodily identification, we start feeling that we have to enjoy the body. That desire comes. Automatically it comes because of the identification. Identification is a big thing, which is called in Shastram as adhyasam. Adhyasam means this identification. So when the identification is with the body, immediate thing, next one is we want to enjoy the body. And that is why it is said like that. Avidya kama. Desires is followed by avidya. So when that desire comes, that I have to enjoy my body, when it is in a very subtle level, more subtle level it's happening inside, you will engage in karma. That's where karmam comes. Once karmam, it has come down, means you have come to the next level. From avidya, it came to kamam, and now it is level of karmam. Once it has come to karmam, then naturally, the karmam, what you will do, will depend on these three modes of nature, what is inside you. If it is goodness, you will engage in activities in sattvagunam. If it is passion inside you, rajogunam inside you, then you will engage in karmam corresponding to rajogunam, according to the rajasic nature. And if there is tamogunam inside you, then you will engage in karmam which is based on tamogunam, tamasic karma. So that is why avidya, kamam, karmam. Now the next one. From karmam comes karma vasana. Every karmam you do, it will create vasana inside. No doubt about that. And if you keep on doing karmam, karma will lead to only one thing. It will create so much vasanas inside that you have no other option except to keep on accepting different bodies. Because those vasanas will keep increasing inside. It will never leave you. And you cannot run these two things side by side. Self-realization is to become free from all these things. And on the other hand, if you have cultivated so much karma vasana inside, it will be impossible for you to come to the platform of spiritual life. Because karma vasana will be driving you further and further and further away from the spiritual truth. Karma is an important topic in the Vedam, whether it is through Karmakandam, or whether it is through Karma Yogam, whether you study through the Ekadasi Skandam, wherever you look at it about karma, how Krishna has spoken about it, and then you will understand the importance of coming out of this karmic cycle. And karma continuously degrade you. It will drag you down further and further. And you may be thinking, I am enjoying my life with all my karma. But actually what karmam is doing is that it is taking you away from the reality. So what he is saying here is that sattvagunam, when it builds up in a person, that person, when he has a sattvika nature, then when the sattvagunam is present in the world, at that time, he will experience the benefit of that, of his pious results, pious activities. It will come out. What he is saying here is, in this verse, that Muktalpa Viswakhradaye Paribhavidaya Jnanalpane Bhagavadena Nama Ishwaraya. That Krishna's role in all these things. That is what Gajendra is saying. What is Krishna's role in all these things? This is our actual situation. But how that happens, that is what is spoken here. Like here, you can see, suppose a person is in sattva-gunam, and if the world, the general society is in a sattvic nature, then it means that the person in sattva-gunam will enjoy that presence of the sattva-gunam in the world. Whereas the person in rajogunam and tamogunam won't enjoy it. He will find it very suffocating. For him, sattva-gunam will be very difficult to handle. He'll find it very difficult, right? Similarly, if in the world there is a lot of rajogunam, then if the person is in rajogunam, right, he will think that he is having a great time in this world. You see how the two things work together. Suppose I have a rajasic nature in me, and the rajasic nature means, you know what that means. Rajasic nature means wants to enjoy, wants all opulences, sense gratification, comforts, everything in life. This is rajasic nature. Rajasic nature is not for giving up things. Rajasic nature is to accumulate things, to enjoy life, and that desire inside. This happens in a very subtle level. We may not even be aware of that ourselves. But if that is our nature, which we have brought with us from birth, if that vasana is inside me, and if the world outside is also equally favorable, then you will see all my pious activity results will come at this time, so that I can enjoy the world. And I will think that I must have done a lot of pious activities in my life, that's why am I enjoying my life. This will happen to us. This is how happiness and distress in this world is. All controlled by our own vasanas, what we have brought with us, and the world in whichever condition it is. When the two come together, you feel the benefit from that. If you are in sattva-gunam and the world is in some sattva-gunam, then you will feel that you are enjoying your life, because your sattva-gunam is complementing the world sattva-gunam. Similarly, if you are in rajogunam, if you have come to this world and the world is in rajogunam, everybody is busy with making money and increasing the materialistic standard of life. This is all symptoms of rajogunam it is. What do they call it as? Economic development, isn't it? Constantly increasing the standard of living. This is the only goal in life. All that indicates is, it's nothing but rajogunam in that world. If you fall into that world, and if you come with rajogunam, you are the right person to be there with them. And you will enjoy life, because everything is wonderful. Your nature and the world complement each other very well. So, if you come with rajogunam, a world with rajogunam will be ideal, and you will feel that you are enjoying the results of your activities, previous activities. And when that happens for a rajasic person, the one who has come with sattva-gunam will find it difficult. You see? The one who has come with sattva-gunam, for him it will be unbearable. Because this world at that time is suitable for rajasic person. Now normally, as I mentioned before, rajasam and tamasam are very close to each other. They work together. And sattva-gunam keeps away from them. And this is why Krishna is saying in the Bhagavatam also that ahami tyanyadha buddhi pramatyasya yadahvati ulsarpadi rajo ghoram tato vaigarigam mana ekadasha skandam. Krishna is saying that, isn't it? Ulsarpadi rajo ghoram tato vaigarigam mana. Then all rajogunam does to us is, Krishna calls it as ghoram. Ghoram means heavy it is on us, right? So rajogunam and tamogunam, they work together. So you can take it more or less that if Rajogunam is enjoying, people with Rajogunam is enjoying, to some extent Tamogunam also is enjoying at that time. They are together. So when Rajogunam is enjoying its results of pious activities, the people with Tamogunam is also getting some benefit at that time. They are also enjoying. So similarly, if in the world Tamogunam is very strong, like at the moment, the way it is looking like that, then it is a time which suits the Rajasic people also. Rajasic, Sattvic, Tamasic, the three people, right? So, So whether it is world is in Rajogunam or world is in Tamogunam, either way, right? These two people, Rajasic nature and Tamasic nature, both of them will enjoy the world. Both people who are in the Rajasic nature as well as in Tamasic nature, both of them will enjoy the world if in the world is absorbed in Rajogunam or Tamogunam. Rajogunam or Tamogunam. Because it's their time to enjoy life. It's their results of their happiness, what they are deriving. Happiness in the world, generally among people, they think differently. They don't understand all the intricacies of this. They think, I must have done a lot of pious activities, that's why I'm enjoying now. That's how generally the society interprets like that. When somebody is very wealthy or somebody is having a lot of sense gratification, people think he must have done a lot of good things. But it is not so straightforward as we think about it, right? So, in this way, according to our swabhavam, swabhavam, vasana, swabhavam, prakriti, all means the same thing. At different times, Krishna uses different terminology, right? So, depending on out of these three, which one is present in the world, at that time, those who are in that particular modes of nature, which means sattvagunam, rajogunam, tamogunam, they will feel the benefit from that. So, as I said before, that tamogunam is present in a person, then he will feel the benefit for tamogunis when the world is in a mess. When there is so much of a fighting and killing and all that, such people feel happiness in life from that. They get the happiness from that, right? So, because it is their time, those who have come with Tamogunam, it is their time now to enjoy life. Because they have come with that Tamasic Vasana. So, automatically, that Tamasic Vasana is compatible with the world vasana. The world is a vasana, its own vasana is going its own way. Right. So, that's all it is. So, three modes in it. That's what he's referring to here. Gajendra is saying that. Muktalpa viso hridaye paribhavidaya jnanal dushprabhanaya gunasanga vivarjidaya. What does that gunasanga vivarjidaya means? That if Krishna is not touched by the modes of nature, Andaryami inside. He doesn't have any modes of nature. Modes of nature cannot touch him. He is beyond the three modes, is it not? So, if you become a devotee, if you understand the Krishna consciousness properly, then they will not be also affected by the three modes of nature. And they will be happy and peaceful in all circumstances. Right? So, whereas those who are under the modes of nature, who has got this Satya Rajasa Tamasa Vasana inside, they will feel this up and down in life. It's they who feel this happiness and distress in life, right? So, so
if you have understood Bhagavatam and if you have taken it into the heart, then when ups and downs comes in life, Krishna will give you that strength from inside and won't be affected by the three modes. So when happiness comes in life, they won't find it particularly any difference from when sufferings comes, right? Because their happiness is coming from Krishna, not coming from the modes of nature. And they will not be concerned about when wealth comes or when material sense gratification comes, it won't have any effect on them. They will not be affected by that. Their concern is all the time centered around Krishna, who is present within the heart. So therefore, when things happen in life, favorably or unfavorably, that will not upset them. That will not disturb their mind. And this is the difference between an ordinary person and a proper devotee. Devotee do not get affected by the three modes of nature because devotee is controlled by Krishna. Ordinary people are controlled by the modes of nature. So, even if this devotee has done sinful things in previous lives, even then he will not get affected by the reactions coming from that sinful activities. So he will continue to focus on Krishna consciousness and self-realization, and thereby he will experience Krishna's presence inside more rather than the impact of the modes of nature. Right? And you can see that their mind, proper devotee's mind, under all circumstances, will be in a happy state. And in order to explain that, you saw that in the seventh canto, Hiranyakashipu tortured Prahlada, isn't it? But Bhagavata mentions there that Prahlada totally took Krishna shelter, Narasimha Murti shelter. And every moment he was experiencing Krishna inside. Therefore, the more Hiranyakashipu tortured him, the more Prahlada took shelter of Krishna. With the result was that he did not affect him. You remember all those verses in the seventh canto. When Prahlada was tortured by Hiranyakashipu, how Prahlada took more shelter of Krishna. And with the result was that nothing had any effect on him. Right? So, devotees are concerned that karma bhalam, result of karma, and its impact on us, happiness and distress, will not affect them, will not affect the devotee. Right? Because they take shelter of Krishna. And dependence on Krishna and if we follow this process, then it is possible that even if some unexpected disaster comes in life, sometimes it is possible that you could get shaken by that, but it is possible to control our conditions of mind and able to maintain a balance inside, right? Problem will be there, it won't go, but it won't affect you. That is the difference. So, what Antaryami is responsible for everything. One who has taken shelter of Krishna, Krishna makes sure that he may have his prarabdham will follow him. Nobody can change that. Prarabdham will come, but it won't affect you. In other words, when anything, happiness and distress is centered around the mind, isn't it? It is a mind that is experiencing the happiness and mind that is experiencing the distress. And mind is in the subtle body. Mind is in the subtle body. So it is the subtle body that is keeping your happiness and distress in life. And this subtle body gets its strength from Antaryami inside. Antaryami decides everything of the activities of the subtle body. So one who has taken shelter of the Antaryami, Antaryami makes sure that this so-called happiness and distress, how much impact it should have on the mind, is controlled by the Antaryami. Prarabdham won't go away. Prarabdham will come. It will give us a lot of problems for the body and the mind. But the intensity of the prarabdham on the mind is controlled by the Antaryami from within. And for a devotee, Antaryami will make sure, provided we are devotees, right? For the devotee, Krishna will make sure that the intensity of suffering, what will affect the mind, will be reduced. That's all what happens at that time. Dushprapanaya gunasanga vivarjidaya. That's what that line is meaning. Means that. Atma atma japta griha vitta janeshu saktehi. Dushprapanaya gunasanga vivarjidaya. Mukta atma visokhrdaye paribhavidaya. Jnana atmane bhagavate nama ishwaraya. Krishna is Ishwara, isn't it? He is Ishwara. In Ishwara's role, he has the capacity to control the distress what we are supposed to experience for the sinful activities what we have done in previous lifetimes. When it matures and starts attacking us, coming back to us, in the form of the results of our activities, the intensity of that on the mind will be controlled by Antaryami inside for a devotee, so that he does not lose the fall off from his spiritual life. So, that is all that verse is about. Yeah, you can see from that verse that not to forget this, that Krishna is present inside us as Antaryami, from each one of us, right? So, and bodily extensions, wealth, in all these things, people have their attachment, isn't it? We have attachment to our own body. We have attachment to our bodily extensions. And we have attachment to the wealth. These three things, right? That's what it's saying. Atma atma japta griha vitta janeshu sakte. That's what that means, right? So, if for those who have that attachment so strongly, it is very difficult to develop attachment for Krishna. Yeah. So, even though Krishna is right inside us, but they say Krishna is so close to us, at the same time, he is far away from us. For whom? Who have this Alpa alpa japta griha vitta janeshu sakte. One who is attached to body, one who is attached to bodily extensions, and one who is attached to wealth. Those three things, right? You will see this, Krishna puts that in the Bhagavad Gita also. The same thing what Bhagavatam is saying. Krishna is so close to us But at the same time, Krishna is far away from us. Krishna is very close to us, but when Bhagavad Gita says, it puts it like this, in the 13th chapter, in the 16th verse, Bahirandasya Bhutanam Acharam Charam Evacha Sushmatvata Avijnayam Durastam Chantike Chatat. If you look at that verse, he says, Bahirandasya Bhutanam Acharam Charam Evacha Sukshmatvatat Avijnayam Durastam Chantike Chatat. The Supreme Truth exists both internally and externally, in the moving and non-moving. Krishna is present in everyone, inside and outside, in the moving and the non-moving, right? He is beyond the power of all of the material senses to see or to know. With senses you cannot know him, right? Although far, far away, he is also near to all. Both. How is that possible? This is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. In so many places you will find statements like this. So, in order to understand this verse, you have to study Bhagavatam. So, Bhagavad Gita will tell you the theory side of it. Only the theory side is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is saying, Krishna is closest to you than anybody else in this world, which is the truth. He is Antaryami inside, right outside our subtle body is present there. But then he is saying that durastam chandike chatat, he is the far away from you. Why is it said like that? It is because of this. One who has attachment to the body, and one who has attachment to the bodily extensions, and one who has attached to the wealth, because these are the three important things. For him, Krishna is very far away. And one who has no attachment to those things, Krishna is, you will feel Krishna's presence inside. This is what that is trying to say. So, Bahirandascha Bhudanam Acharam Charam Evacha, whether moving or non-moving, we are all the moving ones. Plants and the trees are the non-moving ones. They also have the same thing. And Sushmatvata Avijnayam, it is so sushmam. So sushmam means extremely subtle. It is. Sushmatvata Avijnayam, you cannot even know that. Why is that? Durastam Chandike Chatat. He is very far away for a person who is attached to these three things. And he is so close to you if you are detached from these three things. That is why it is so important that attachment to the body and attachment to the bodily extensions and attachment to the wealth must leave us. And if we keep on hugging them all the time, and if we have to stay happy in life, that's not going to work. Then Krishna is far away. It will be, the journey will be further and further. It will go further for a very long time. That's what it is saying here. So, because why? Why it says here? Gunasanga vivarjidaya. Bhagavatam is saying, Gunasanga vivarjidaya. Because Krishna is Gunasanga vivarjidaya. He has no connection with the three modes of nature. That means, Gunasanga means this attachment. That means, Krishna doesn't stick to anything. He cannot stick to anything. He is beyond the three modes of nature, right? Attachment to the body, and attachment bodily extensions, and sense gratification, all these things has no effect on him. Krishna has shown that. If you study Krishna's activities in this world, you will see he has no attachment anywhere. When he left Vrindavanam, when he left this world, Krishna has shown that he has no connection anywhere. So, why is that? Because he knows who he is. That's why it is so. Right? So, because of that, Gunasanga Vivarjidaya. Gunasangi. We are all Gunasangis. Right? So, therefore we find it difficult because of this Gunasanga. Three modes of nature. then Muktalpami Sukhradeye Paribhavidaya. Attachment to the body and attachment to the bodily extensions, right? Bodily extensions, what that means, it's the same thing spoken in another way. Attachment to the body is aham. Attachment to bodily extension is mamada. Mamada. Ahamda, mamada. Aham, mama. Aham, mama. So this is there in the Bhagavatam, everywhere you will find. Kundi Sudhi is all about mama. Bhishma Sudhi is all about aham. Yeah? So, and similarly, the pastimes of, you see, Bhagavatam, when you are studying Bhagavatam, katha is there. Apart from katha, there is studi. Then there is upadesham also. Now, while studying Bhagavatam, katha, you have to understand the katha background, because katha, it is through katha that the message is spoken. Whereas in upadesham, it is directly told. The instruction is direct in the upadesham. You can see that. When Krishna talks about attachment, Krishna, if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see, then he says the householder's problems. He says where his attachments are. And he will suffer from that, Krishna says. And he says the householder, if he has not developed these vairagyam in his spirit, in his life, then he has to suffer. He says there is no choice in there. He has to accept that. And there is no point in crying about it, he said. So, upadesham is always direct instruction. Now, problem with direct instruction is, when we are in rajogunam and tamogunam, it won't have its effect on us, impact on us. Even though you hear instructions, right, you won't accept it. You will still think in your mind, Krishna is saying something, it has nothing to do with me. That kind of mindset will come to us. So this is the problem with upadesham. Upadesham is direct instruction. So unless one is in a lot of sattva-gunam, he won't be able to accept the upadesham. He'll find it very hard. That's why it all looks, it'll go like this in our mind. It'll come and it'll go. It has no impact on us. Krishna is saying a lot of things to us, but it's not having an impact on us. Why is that? Because there is no sattva-gunam inside us. That is why Krishna is saying these three modes of nature, it controls even your capacity to accept things, capacity to assimilate, or capacity to take on board. Even that capacity goes away if you are in rajogunam tamogunam. So upadesham has got that problem. Even though it is direct instructions, katha, stuti, upadesham. Upadesham is good for those people who have a lot of sattva-gunam in them, because they will be able to take it on board. Whereas those in rajogunam and tamogunam, they won't find it interesting. And this is the reason why you can see this. Many people, they think that they have become devotees, but because of the rajogunam and tamogunam inside, shastram is not attraction to them. They are more into doing things. Doing becomes more attractive to them rather than the absorbing the knowledge of the shastra. Shastric knowledge, it's not easy to absorb inside. It takes time. Similarly, stuti also has got a problem. Through stuti, different devotees, they will convey you the purport of the katha. More clear is through stuti than in the katha. What is spoken in the katha, when it comes through stuti, you will get a little bit more clarity in the stuti, whether it is Prahlada stuti. For example, you hear Prahlada's pastimes, everything. But when it comes to Prahlada's stuti, you understand what Prahlada is saying much better than reading all through the stories of Prahlada. When it comes to Prahlada's stuti, you understand what Prahlada is saying directly. Through his stuti, he is conveying to Narasimha Murthy that this is my heart and this is my situation. You have to help me. And that's the way that stuti flows, isn't it? both jnanam, vairagyam, bhakti, everything is there in that stuti. So stuti is little different than the upadesham. Stuti conveys the message of the katha little bit more in a directly, and you will be able to understand when it comes from a person, rather than when you are told directly by Krishna himself. Yeah. So Bhagavatam is full of stutis. More than Upadesham and more than Katha, it is stutis in the Bhagavatam. So through stuti to extract the message, you do require some help. Each stuti is different. Mujugunda stuti, Prahlada stuti, Bhishma stuti, Brahma stuti, Dhruva stuti. Every stuti is unique in its own way. Now what we are discussing is Gajendra stuti, right? So in each stuti, you will have to spend a lot of time to understand the differences between different studies and what each study is trying to convey to us. And that will also take a lot of time to study the study properly. But study has a capacity to give you the experience of the katha, what was been spoken before. Because you can see, Shiva Brahma, she has put every time a study right in the middle of a katha. Katha is going on, and in the middle suddenly comes the stuti. Stuti comes in, isn't it? Dhruva stuti you take, Prahlada stuti you take, any stuti for that matter. Krishna came with the cows and the cowherd boys and everything. Brahma came, stole the cows and calves, everything, and then suddenly Brahma comes and Brahma stuti comes. Is it not? So every time if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see the background first. And from the background you can see a stuti is coming very soon. And that will be that devotee. Brahma stuti, or Prahlada stuti, or Bhishma stuti, or Dhruva stuti, or Kunti stuti. Everything is in the background of katha. Katha is the background. Stuti is in the middle, comes in. So, but stuti is little bit more easier to relate with than Upadesham. Upadesham is hard. Upadesham is the, like Kapilopadesham, Krishabopadesham, Bharatopadesham, Uddhava Upadesham. These are the four major Upadeshams in the Bhagavatam. All of them are very unique and requires a lot of time to properly get to understand that. It takes a lot of time. Kapila Upadesham on its own, very important. Similarly, Rishabha Upadesham equally. Bharata Upadesham, Uddhava Upadesham, all of them. So Upadesham is on a higher level. Stuti is on a middle level, you can say. Because stuti is spoken in the background of katha. Background of katha. Then comes katha. In katha, the way it is structured is, through katha when they speak, that the lot of things will be spoken in the katha. Sometimes it may look very exaggeration. Sometimes, so many things. In katha, because it's katha it is. Normally we say like this. katha, that is the nature of katha, isn't it? So katha is story, but at the same time, it is not just story. That's the important thing to realize, yeah? It's not just story. Through katha, Vedavyasa Maharshi want to convey a message to us. But he chose this path of katha. Why? Why is that? Reason for that is, people who are in rajogunam and tamogunam, they will be able to relate with katha more than with those who are in the sattogunam. People in the sattogunam, for them katha won't be that attractive. For them, stuti and upadesham will give them more impact on them. People in rajogunam and tamogunam, katha will have a higher impact on them. It is just because of our modes of nature within us. That's the way it is. So, every katha, if you look in Bhagavatam, you will find this. Somewhere, there will be a message in that katha. Now, we are really studying this Gajendra Stuti, right? And then, in the 8th canto, basically, we have got Gajendra story, Gajendra Moksham. Then the churning of the milk ocean. and that, then the Vamana Avatara, Vamana's appearance. These are the three major episodes in the 8th canto, right? So what is the message everywhere it's coming through? In all the three, there are three different messages. And the message also Shukha Brahmarshi has spoken at the end of each of them. In Gajendra Moksham, he will say at the end, the main message in the Gajendra Moksham is, Harismriti Sarva Vibhad Vimokshanam. In one line, it finished. He said, what does that mean? Harismriti Sarva Vibhad Vimokshanam. In other words, that in all problems of life, whenever we are suffering in life, at all times, remembering Krishna is the solution to the problem. Nothing else. Harismriti Sarva Vibhad Vimokshanam. Vivata means dangers. In all danger time, danger is in life. Danger means, we know what danger means, right? Now, here is the problem. We think danger is only when my body is doing well, my body has no problems, and I have enough to eat and a good place to sleep, and my life is going on fairly good. We think there is no danger. This is the problem with us. Most of us think like that. I'm comfortable. People say, how are you? I'm comfortable, he says. Who is comfortable in this world? Can anybody say that they are comfortable in this world? If somebody is thinking like that, you can say that that is the symptom of Maya. How Maya makes you feel that you are very comfortable in this world. So basically, what Gajendra is saying is, when that verse, Harismriti Sarva Vibhad Vimokshana, Harismriti means remembering Krishna. Vibhata means danger. Vimokshana means you get released from that, from your disturbances. So, strictly speaking, we are all in serious dangers in life. At every moment, there is trouble. We are, any moment, our life can change. And there is danger all the time. Waiting one way or the other, it comes in the old age, disease, death, then all other problems. We know what all type of problems people are going through. So, in all these disturbances, Gajendra is saying, Harismriti, taking Krishna shelter is the only, remembering Krishna, Harismriti, Sarva Vibhad Vimokshanam. This is the message of Gajendra, because Gajendra lived that life through and he saw what happened to him. When he had a good time, he had his family life and he had so many friends and families, but nobody could protect him when he got into trouble. From there he understood that only Krishna is a shelter, there is no other shelter. So that is what he is saying there. So, Ahamda and Mamada, we were talking about that. Aham, Mama. So, Ahamda is to the body, attachment to the body. Mamada means attachment to the bodily extensions and to the wealth and things like that. So, only such people who have become free from Aham and Mama, they can alone able to enjoy Krishna consciousness. So that is what he is saying here. Muktaltma Bisokhradaye Paribhavidaya Jnanalpane Bhagavate Nama Ishwarayam. So here it is in the both. He is saying that you are present in the Saguna Bhavam and Nirguna Bhavam both. Yeah. In Nirguna means pure Sachidananda Brahman. And in Sagunam, he has got all the other attributes like Aishwaryam, Viryam, Yashasya, Shri, Jnanam, Vairagyam, all those things, right? So, so those who are detached from the body, they live in this world completely absorbed in Krishna. Amriti, absorbed in Krishna. Look at the next verse. Yam dharma kama artha vimukti kama భజందమిష్టాం గదివాప్నువంది కింద్వా శిశు ఔత్యభి దేహమవ్యయం కరోదు సబ్రదయో విమోక్షణం. ధర్మం, అర్థం, కామం, మోక్షం, ఫోర్ థింగ్స్ రైట్, విచ్ ఈస్ ట్రాన్స్లేటెడ్ అగైన్ యాజ్ రిలిజియాసిటీ, ఎకనామిక్ డెవలప్మెంట్, సెన్స్ గ్రాటిఫికేషన్ అండ్ లిబరేషన్. ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్ యూ హ్యావ్ దాట్, దెన్ ఇఫ్ యూ హ్యావ్ దాట్ డిజైర్, స్టిల్ యూ విల్ గెట్ ద రిజల్ట్, బికాస్ కృష్ణస్ అప్రోచ్ ఈస్ లైక్ దిస్. ఇన్ భగవద్గీత కృష్ణ విల్ సే దిస్, ఏ యథామం ప్రబద్ధ్యంతి తాంస్తదైవ భజామ్యహ. ఇఫ్ యూ అప్రోచ్ కృష్ణ విత్ డిజైర్, కృష్ణ విల్ రెస్పాండ్ అకార్డింగ్లీ. ఏ యథామం ప్రబద్ధ్యంతి తాంస్తదైవ భజామ్యహం, మమ వర్మాని వర్తందే మనుష్య పార్థ సర్వశ ఈ సైస్. సో డిపెండింగ్ అపాన్ ద మెంటాలిటీ ఆఫ్ ద డివోటీ, అకార్డింగ్లీ కృష్ణ రెస్పాండ్స్ రైట్. For example, if somebody wants dharmam, religious principles in life, he gets dharmam. Similarly, one who wants artham, wealth, he gets wealth. Similarly, one who wants sense gratification, he gets sense gratification. And one who wants liberation, he gets liberation. Right? Everything Krishna gives to that person. Now, if one doesn't have any of these four, for him, Krishna will give what he wants then, right? Or what he doesn't, he has not even asked for, Krishna will even give that as well. So, for example, suppose one doesn't have any desires inside, Krishna will even present him with things what he may not have asked for. And that's why that verse is important. Yayathamam prabhadyande tamstadeva bhajamyaham. Why did Krishna say like that? It's because of this, that Krishna's relationship with the devotee is in that way. Ye yathamam prabhadyanti tam sadaiva bhajamyaham. How you approach him, accordingly he responds, his response, right? And that is Krishna's compassion for the jiva, compassion for the jiva. So, a devotee who approached Krishna, but he is going through a lot of difficulties in health reasons. So Krishna will make sure that the body does not become a burden for him in his spiritual advancement. That's the help Krishna will offer. If health is becoming an issue for him, then Krishna makes sure that the body does not become a burden for him. And even if he has not asked for good health, Krishna makes sure that let the health not become an obstacle in his progress in spiritual life, right? So that's what he is saying here. Dharmam artham kamam dharma kamartha vimukti kama yam bhajandam ishtam gadi mapnu vandi. So idea is, Krishna wants us to understand what bhakti is. When we have a lot of desires inside, or when we have a lot of things we want from Krishna, then it is difficult to understand the bhakti, proper bhakti, right? So, so that is called ekanta bhakti, isn't it? భజందం ఇష్టాం గదిమాప్నువంది కింద్వాశిషోరాతి దేహం అవ్యయం కరోదు మే అభ్రదయో విమోక్షణం. సో కృష్ణ ఇస్ సేయింగ్ దట్ ది డివోటీ, దిస్ ఏకాంత భక్తి, దట్ ఈస్ ది ఇంపార్టెంట్ వర్డ్. ఏకాంత భక్తి మీన్స్ దట్ he wants bhakti more than anything else. Other things is not important for him. So for such a person, Krishna is saying that kindvashisho ratyabhi deham avyayam karedume Karedumedabhradayo Vimokshanam. Apart from dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham, which is normally the four things in which ordinary people are absorbed with, religious principles, out of these four also, the middle two are more important for everybody, artham, kamam. So, conditioned person, jiva, only thinks about those two, artha, kamam. Dharmam and moksham is not priority for ordinary people. We are talking about, right? Bhagavadam is trying to make us understand what bhakti means. We have misunderstanding about bhakti, isn't it? Bhakti, we think we are doing a lot of things, so it means must be a great devotee. That's not how bhakti works, right? So, importance is to understand these things, right? Everything you have to see through Shastra. Not that we do something and we justify it later. That doesn't mean anything. So, out of the four, dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham, normally those who are in rajogunam and tamogunam, for them, the middle two are important, artham and kamam. Dharmam and moksham is not in the top of the list. They are at the back, right? Dharmam and moksham. So what Sudha Goswami did in the beginning of Bhagavatam itself, he explained this to Shravanagarshi, second chapter. Dharmasya abhavargasya na artho arthaya kalpade arthasya dharmai gandasya kamo labhaya hismrada kamasya indriya priti labho jiveda yavada jivasya tattva jnyasa atvaya seha karmabhi. Two verses he spoke. What did he say to him? He said, dharmasya abhavargasya na artho arthaya kalpade. Artham is not the goal of dharmam. Normally, these four things, dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham, based on the Vedam or Varnashama dharmam, dharmam is the foundation of everything. Even if you have to acquire wealth, it has to be based on dharmam. Even if you have to acquire sense gratification, it has to be based on dharmam. If you acquire wealth based on dharmam, if you have sense gratification based on dharmam, you will see Krishna stressing this point everywhere. Bhagavad Gita also. Dharma aviruddha bodheshu kamam. He says there, is it not? Dharma aviruddha bodheshu kamosmi bharadarshava. Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. What is he saying? He is saying that if you are acquiring wealth, or if you are having sense gratification, it should not go against dharmam. If it is not within the periphery of dharmam, then it is against dharmam. So, dharma aviruddha bhudeshu, which is not against dharmam, that kamam is me, Krishna says. So, what that means is, both artham and kamam should be based on dharmam. Dharmam is the foundation of everything, right? Dharmam is the foundation of everything. So, based on dharmam, all these things are allowed. Artham is allowed, kamam is allowed. So, but if you ignore dharmam, if dharmam is the foundation, and if you live a life based on that, acquire wealth, artham, and you have sense gratification also based on that, kamam, if those three things are done, then you are eligible for the fourth one, moksha. Liberation, right? So, if you take 25% each, 25 dharmam, 25 kamam, artham, 25 kamam, 25 moksham, if these first 75, dharmam, artham and kamam, is accordingly followed based on the shastram, then the last 25, Krishna gives it to you, if it is done that way. But this doesn't happen though. That's the problem. The first three doesn't happen. Most of the people doesn't care for the first 25. The last 25, they are not interested. It's the middle 50 they are concerned about. For that, they will spend all their energy and life in that direction and do all kinds of nonsense in this world, and then they will leave this body and go. and come back in another form next life to reap everything what they have done in this life in another form. They will reincarnate again in another form. So that is why it is said that so in such a situation that bhakti will never understand for such a person, right? So ekanta bhakti means a bhakti level, a relationship with Krishna which is beyond all these three. Arthakamam has no importance there anymore. Even moksham is not important for them. For such a person, Krishna is saying here that kindu ashishoratibi deham avyayam karodumed abradayo vimokshanam. For such a person, Krishna will give them everything. Even he will give him a body what is suitable for him to execute his dharma properly. And let him protect me, says Gajendra. I don't desire anything else. Gajendra has come to his senses now. Unfortunately, this happened to him, for Gajendra, isn't it? This happened to him. So, then, after saying that, Gajendra says that because others have not enjoyed Krishna consciousness properly. Proper Krishna consciousness means sometimes we don't understand, we think that Krishna consciousness means doing a lot. No. What he's saying here is that the relationship with Krishna for a devotee is simply to be absorbed in Krishna. Smarana. Remember what Shukha Brahmarshi said that? That's smarana, to continue, right? So, and that is the Brahmanandam, Seva Anandam. Anandam that comes from Seva. Seva doesn't mean physical only. Seva actually means that able to relate with Krishna in some way. We have to have a relationship with Krishna first of all. As we discussed before, the mellows are there. Shandam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Vatsalyam, Madhuryam. All those mellows are there. And mellows are spoken only for one reason. For those devotees, one should know oneself how he can relate with Krishna. Because to relate with Krishna, you require a relationship, isn't it? That relationship has to be under one of these. Like we mentioned before, that all the sages, the rishis, they have a relationship with Krishna. How? Neutral form. Shandam, isn't it? Through knowledge and through shandam. Shandam is their shandarasam. Shandarasam. Through shandarasam, they have a relationship. Bhishma has shandarasam. And similarly, many devotees had dasyam. Dasyam is the one for Prahlada, Vibhishana, Anjaneya, Uddhava, Ambarish, all are examples of that. Many great personalities are all in that mood of relationship with Krishna. Dasyam, is it not? Then there is Sakhyam, like Arjuna, cowherd boys, they are all Sakhyam. Then Vatsalyam, like Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and many other men, cowherd men and gopis, they had a relationship with Krishna like that when Krishna was present here. Then of course the Madhurya Bhava, which the gopis had with Krishna. Now, as we said before, out of these five, four of them are not that accessible to ordinary people. And you know why. The reason is, most of us, jivas, are in Rajogunam and Tamogunam. And those four of them, which means Shandam, Sakhyam, Vatsalyam, Madhuryam, they are for people who have developed a lot of Sattogunam in them. For others, it is not possible. For example, you can see that Madhurya Bhavam, right? Who developed Madhurya Bhavam? Gopis in Vrindavanam. They had the Madhurya Bhavam, is it not? And who are these gopis? You look at them. Who are they? They are rishis from previous life. In Ramachandra's pastime, they were the sages in their journey. Ramachandra met them at different times, different rishis. And they asked Ramachandra to associate with Ramachandra in that way. They were given the opportunity. So they are called rishicharis. The rishis came as gopis, right? Shruti came as gopis, Vedam personified. They came as gopis. And similarly, people from the higher planets, they came as gopis, did they not? So if you look at all that, you can see they were not ordinary people. Krishicharis, Shrutichharis, and great women from the heavenly planets, and great, great devotees they were, who have come in that form as gopis to enjoy that mellow of Madhurya Bhava with Krishna. So naturally it belongs to that category of people. Ordinary jiva to think that he is going to have a Madhurya Bhava with Krishna, it's not going to happen. You can say that you are following that, but so that problem is there. And it is equally important to realize that the rishi's relationship with Krishna, like Shanta Bhava or Bhishma had, that is also very exclusive, like the Madhurya Bhava. What to talk about Vatsalyam and Sakhyam. To develop those relationships also is difficult. So out of these five, the one that is possible for ordinary jivas is Dasyam. Dasya Bhakti. So that Dasya Bhakti, which is the why it's spoken in the Bhagavatam so strongly, like you can see Uddhava. Uddhava had 115 years of association with Krishna. Still he remained as a servant. Did he not? So what does that show? Similarly, if you look at all the Anjaneya Swami and Vibhishana and Prahlada and many others like that, they all is a representation of the ordinary jivas and their relationship with Krishna. So that is why. So because that relationship, Dasya Bhavam, develops into Seva. Seva comes to that. And they will not desire anything else, but it has to come to such a level. Dasya Bhakti has to reach to such a level that there is no more desire. And that is why, in the next two verses, you will see, Ekandino yasyana kanchanartham vanchandiyevai bhagaval prapannaha atyalbudam tacharidam sumangalam gayandam ananda samudramadnaha tamaksharam brahmavaram paresham avyaktam adhyalpika yoga gamyam ati indriyam sushma vivadi duram anandamadhyam paripurna meethe. Here, completely surrendering to Krishna, like the way Uddhava did, Vibhishana did, Prahlada did, and Anjaneya Swami did, Ambarisha did. First of all, that is the thing in Dasya Bhakti. Total surrender to Krishna, complete dependence on Krishna. In other words, these personalities we are talking about, they didn't want anything from Krishna, they just wanted Krishna. Right? And they never asked for anything, any one of them. Neither Prahlada, nor Uddhava, nor Vibhishana, nor Anjaneya, nor Ambarish. All these great personalities, right? But Krishna took care of them, all of them, right? So, in order to make that more clear, there's a story about that. A master had two servants, right? A master had two servants, right? One servant will serve the master. He knows what the master wants. He understood. Master expects this from me. He wants me to do this, right? So he won't ask anything from the master. He will do everything what the master wants. But he will not ask anything. He will make sure that master comforts and master happiness is more important for him. So he did things in such a way that master didn't have to say anything to him. He will do everything so that the master knows that he has done it and he wants to keep me happy. And master was happy with him and he was happy with the master. Right. The other person, the second one, he won't leave the master. He will stay with the master all the time. But he will always keep asking him something from the master. Right. So, this carried on for a while. After that, the master realized that, what is the use of having this kind of servant? Constantly wants something from me. So, you can understand that out of these two, to whom the master will be interested? If you get two servants like this, which one will do better? One who is with you all the time and trying to get everything what you can, he can from you. And another one who does not want anything from you, but he wants to make sure that you are happy with everything what he is doing, right? So, this second one, who is constantly asking for something, one day Krishna tells his, let's assume that it is Krishna. So Krishna says to the to his other servants, as soon as he sees him coming, he says, tell him that I'm not here. He says, I've gone somewhere else, right? So, or you tell him, just give him what he wants and get rid of him from here. He will say like this, right? So, whereas the other one who is serving Krishna genuinely, with sincerity, only with the intention that Krishna should be happy, Krishna will make sure that his life is happy, that all his needs are also met at home. Whatever he needs, Krishna will make sure that it is provided, right? So, for that person, his happiness is coming from serving Krishna within the heart as Antaryami, and able to make sure that he doesn't develop desires inside. Whereas the other one, he has full of desires, but he is with Krishna all the time. He wants to get from Krishna whatever he wants, right? So he requires things to enjoy, whereas the first one doesn't need anything to enjoy. He gets happiness from his service to Krishna within the heart, right? So that is what it is spoken, that Atyalbudam tacharidam sumangalam gayandam ananda samudra magnaha. Ananda samudram, he is in the ocean of bliss out of the, from the service he gets. From the service of seva, he gets that bliss. And when he gets that, he does not want anything from Krishna anymore. Whereas when you don't get that happiness from Krishna, that is when you are asking Krishna for other things to enjoy in life, right? The the first one knows that if I ask for results from my karma, and every karma will bring results which will be mixed with suffering. And you will never get any happiness from outside world, external sense objects. If you get any happiness from sense objects, you can take it that it will also bring some distress along with it. That's the law, that you can't change it. And this is the same question Vidura asked to Maitreya, is it not? Sukhaya karmani karoti loka. That verse, if you look, very profound question that is. He said, no, normally people don't ask such a question. We are all working hard in this world to become happy. And what we find at the end is, happiness, we get sometimes happiness, but distress, even though we haven't worked for distress, distress comes in life. And my Vidura asked this to Maitreya, did he not? We work in the world for what? To become happy, right? And this understanding must come to us, and we all have to individually look at our own life and see whether it is true or not. And that's the only way you can verify it. Just because Vidura said this to Maitreya doesn't mean that that is the last word on that. But look at our own life and you can see this happening. Whose life is successful in this world? All of us have worked hard, many of us have worked hard, and we thought that life is going to be happy, but at the end, what has happened? We all ended up in a stage now, more anxiety, more concern about everything, and more fear builds up inside the body, and one, we can see the futility or the emptiness of our own life at this stage now. What has happened to all our life? What have we done here, right? When we were 25 and 30, we thought we were working hard to become happy in life. But what we have ended up now, when you look at it, have we got anywhere close to what we thought we will become at that time? Sukhaya karmani karoti loko. You can look at that verse. What an important question that is. He is asking that. 비드레와차 수카야 카르마니 카로티 로코 나타이 수감 바 안야두 바람암 바 빈데다 부야 사다메와 두캄 예다트라 육탐 바가완 바데나. For the sake of becoming happy, we are engaging in karma. That's what we did throughout life, is it not? Throughout life we did karma. And what did that happen with that? A lot of karma vasana we have created. And that karma vasana has going to come out later on in another many lifetimes. It will come back again and haunt us. And at that time, we are not bothered about all that. We are just looking at it. Today I am happy, I am making money. What's wrong with my life? This is the way we are looking at it. But Vidura's question is, Nathai sugamva anyadubaramamva. We didn't become happy after doing all that karma. We didn't become happy. And on the other hand, our dukkham has actually increased. Is it not? People won't admit all these things. Only when you get hit, you will realize that anyadubaramamva, that there was no solution to any problems. We couldn't solve any of our problems of life with all working for 50, 60 years. And still we are thinking foolishly that I am happy in my life. Is there any more stupid than that to think? So that's what he is saying here. Sukhaya karmani karyoti loko. Natai sukham va. No sukham came. Anyadubaramam va. Everything, on the other hand, a lot of distress has come in life, right? Vindeda bhuyastadam eva dukham. Yadatra yuktam bhagavan vadena. On the other hand, the intensity of distress is increasing day by day. So tell me what I have to do. After 36 years, Vidura had his pilgrimage all over Bharat Bhumi. And then he comes back, and this is the question he had to ask Maitreya. Imagine how Vidura has analyzed life. Do we analyze life in this way? We never think like this. We are looking like the firefighting going on every day to survive in this world, right? But Vidura's question is very important, and that's the same thing here also. You can see that that the that first realization is that from external objects you won't get any happiness. To come to that realization, right? Every sense object will bring distress at the end, right? Because they are temporary. They are coming from Maya. Kshaniga pratibhasam. That's the word used in the Shastra. Kshaniga pratibhasam, right? Sometimes you may get a little happiness, But by the time you try to enjoy it, it will get destroyed, right? So, just like a nice sweet rice, you put it in the mouth, only for a few seconds you get it. The moment it has crossed this part, finished. The happiness is over. And that is how all material happiness is, right? So, so that is why this kind of karma and trying to become happy from karma is not what Bhagavatam is telling us. Bhagavatam is saying to us, throughout Bhagavatam you can see this point, karma is not going to make you happy at the end. Yeah, and on the other hand, this second Shumnadamsa Katha Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtanam, Hridyandasto Hi Abhadhyani, Vidhanodi Suhral Sadam. That if you hear about Krishna, and if you get attached to Krishna, in that way, by hearing about Krishna, that will alone will take us out of this entanglement where we have got into. That is why it is this question. Shaunaka Rishi asked that, and in answer to that, Sudha Goswami said, the highest occupation of a jiva, what he has to do in this world is Savai Pumsam Paro Dharmam Yado Bhakti Rasokshate Ahaituki Apratihata Yena Alma Samprasidati. That was right. Savai Pumsam Paro Dharmam. Paro Dharmam is Yado Bhakti Rasokshate. Bhakti to Krishna is the highest occupation of a jiva. And it is by that, how do I get that bhakti? And that is why it is through that bhakti, that is his parodharma, paramadharma, right? So, and that bhakti has to be ahaituki, means he does not want anything from Krishna. And only thing is, Krishna has to be experienced within the heart, right? And in order to get there, one who in that direction, intensely working for that, continuous upasana, sadhana for that, to realize that. That is why it was mentioned in that way, ahaituki bhakti, right? Which means, bhakti which is not having any obstacles, no block in between, and one able to have that relationship with Krishna. And that is what it is mentioned there. Atya albhuridam tat charidam sumangalam gayandam ananda samudra magna. Able to glorify Krishna that way, continuously, by absorbing in Krishna's pastimes. When we say like that, to what that means is that Krishna has his appearance, and all the other incarnations have their appearance. All Krishna's pastimes are there, all the incarnations' pastimes are there. Then creation, maintenance and dissolution, srishti, sthiti and samhara. If you combine all these things, that's all connected to Krishna. That's all Krishna's manifestation it is. Creation, maintenance and dissolution, three things, right? This is also related to Krishna. So, able to relate with Krishna through all these things. Creation, maintenance and dissolution, one. Pastimes of Krishna and all the incarnations. Appearance of all the incarnations of Krishna and Krishna himself. Able to absorb in all these things, and that will help us to remember Krishna continuously without any stop, right? So, if it is done like that, then Krishna will manifest within the heart as our very self, right? in the sense that gradually he will experience Krishna as the Antaryami inside. And you don't, this is the Sagunam approach. Saguna Bhava, that's what it is spoken in the first verse. Saguna Bhava. Saguna Bhava means, it is in the Kapila Maharshi's teachings also, to Devahuti, you will find there, the same thing spoken there. So initially it begins like that, experiencing Krishna through these things. One, appearance, Krishna's appearance, and all the incarnations. Then, pastimes of Krishna and pastimes of all the incarnations. Basically the whole of Bhagavatam, in other words. And then, creation, maintenance and dissolution. How to see them through Krishna. It's not so simple like the way we people say that God created this and he went and rested outside. No. In Bhagavatam, how is it spoken? The four types of devastation spoken. Nityam, Naimithiyam, Prakritam, Atyandiyam. The four types of devastation. If you study each of those devastations, you will understand what Krishna's position is. That's the beauty of that. It's not spoken like the way others are saying that God created this world and then he went and rested. No, that's not how you study this. You study Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto those questions come. Krishna talks about Parikshit. That was the last topic what Shukra Brahmarshi spoke before he left. After Parikshit was brought to the platform of Aham Brahmasmi, that is the Brahmavadesham, isn't it? Parikshit becoming, realizing Aham Brahmasmi. That is the 5th chapter, 12.5. 12.6, if you look, what do you find there? Shukra Brahmarshi is leaving. Before he left, he told the audience who are present there, including Sudha Goswami, that the impact of time and impact of liberation, these four devastations, Nityam, Naimithiyam, Prakritam, Atyandiyam, four types of devastation, and the impact of time on that. He has discussed it in detail. Highly philosophical chapter that is. That sixth chapter, 12.6, right? Each verse, if you take and start reading through it, you won't understand what he's saying. You require so much help from others to understand that chapter, 12.6. You can go start reading it when you get time, and you may think you have understood it, but some of the explanations given in that, it's normally they say that chapter has to be heard from a realized soul to understand that chapter, what he's talking about, right? Because otherwise it's not possible to comprehend that chapter. It's that difficult. So we will have a short break and then we'll continue.
Chedo darpanam arjanam bomaha dhavagni nirvapanam shreya kaidava chandriga vidaranam vidhyavadhu jivanam anandham budivardhanam pradivada purnamhuda swadhanam sarvapna subanam param vijayide shri krishna sangirtanam nam namagari bahuda nija sarva shakti tatrapida nevida smaranena kala edadrishitava kriba bhagavan mamabi durdaivam edashamiha janinanuragaha Trunaravishuni jena, Taravaravi sahishuna, Amani namanadena, Kirtaniya sada hari. Nathanam no janam no sundarim, Kavidamba jagadisha kamai, Mama janmani janmani shari, Bhavadad bhakti hari dogitui. Aidanda the new jakingaram, Padidamam vishame bavambodo, Krabayada opada pangajas, Sidaduli sadrisham vichindaya. Nayanam gada shodharia, Padanam gadgada rudaya gira. Pulagar Nijidam Dadawa Bhutavanama Grahane Bhavishari Yugaidam Nimeshena Chakshusha Pravishaidam Shunyaidam Jagal Sarvam Govinda Vrahename Ashlishava Padaradam Pineshtumam Adarshanam Marmahadam Karyotua Yathatadava Vidadadulambado Malpranadha Sudayevana Opera Sarvatra Govinda Nama Sankirtanam Govinda Govinda Egandino yasena kanchanartham, vanchandi evai bhagavel prabannaha, atyal budamda charidam sumangalam, gayandam ananda samudramadnaha. Gajendra says to Krishna,
that a devotee's relationship with him is big different than everybody else's, right? So, saguna bhavam, that is a devotee's relationship, isn't it? Is sagunam. Sagunam means with form, right? So, saguna bhavam happens this way. To understand sagunam, you have to go into Kapilam. Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti Devi. That's where Saguna Bhakti is spoken in detail. Nirgunam is also spoken there. You see the problem. Sagunam, Nirgunam is a word in the Shastra. In English it has become personal and impersonal. And it gives you a feeling that impersonalists are all demons and all that. It's gone in a totally different route, the language is created. When you say like this to people, personalism, impersonalism, which is nothing but sagunam nirgunam it is. When you say sagunam nirgunam, you don't get the same impact when you say personalism, impersonalism. A lot of devotees have got this feeling, especially coming from the English background, they find it very hard, they find it, they have totally misunderstood the whole thing. Sagunam nirgunam is the word in the Bhagavadam and in the India Puranams everywhere. It is sagunam nirgunam. Sagunam nirgunam is not actually personalism, impersonalism. But then that's a word in English. Whatsoever. The same problem as I mentioned before. Sattugunam, rajogunam, tamogunam. You have translated into goodness, passion and ignorance. So I looked at the dictionary. What does this word goodness means? It has no connection with sattugunam at all. Like in general society, if you say a person is very good, he has a lot of goodness in him. Normally what we expect that he is an honest person or he is kind to everybody and compassionate and all that. But that is not sattugunam. Sattugunam is a lot more than that. Krishna is saying if you have sattugunam, you won't be doing anything else in this world except you will be working for self-realization. It is because of lack of sattugunam in us that we are looking for other things in this world. Sattval sanjayate jnanam. Krishna is saying, isn't it? All he is looking for is self-realization, nothing else, if there is sattugunam in a person. But that meaning doesn't come through the word goodness, does it? So the same problem is every word in the Shastram, you will find it. Sagunam nirgunam, that is the right word, but then it has become personal and impersonal. And then we put the whole impersonalism into a demoniac species. And then we think that, oh, that's all useless. It's not what I want. So basically what it is saying is, how does this sagunam progresses? What happens in nirgunam? Nirgunam category is for very few people. Then it is possible for to go through that process. Nirgunam process. And that has come to them for several lifetimes. They may have gone through sagunam before they have come to that level of nirgunam. Because when they come in this life, from their very nature you can see that they are qualified for that nirgunam. From the beginning itself. Nirgunam brahmam. Because Vedam is talking about nirgunam brahmam a lot. And in the Bhagavatam also. So, Saguna Upasana, Nirguna Upasana. These are all spoken in the Bhagavad. Both is in the Kapila. You will see there how Saguna Upasana eventually leads into Nirguna Upasana, which comes much later. So, self-realization means it includes both Sagunam as well as Nirgunam. Only then you can say your spiritual life is complete. But to come to that level, it may take several lifetimes. So, in the Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti Devi, Kapila Maharshi says to Devahuti about that famous word, Sadam Prasangal Mama Virya Samvido Bhavandi Hril Karna Rasayanaha Kathaha Tajoshanadashu Abhavarga Vartmani Shraddha Rati Bhakti Anukramishyati, says there, isn't it? So what's that referring to? That referring to the beginning of Saguna Bhakti. It's all related to Saguna Mitis, Shraddha, Rati, Bhakti, Anukramishyati, right? So, Saguna Bhakti develops in a particular form in a person. and according to the form he is related to. And that is, in Sagunam, you have big options in Sagunam. Nirgunam, no options. There is only one. Antaryami inside, you relate with him through the Nirguna Brahma Dhyanam, through the meditation process. Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, the three processes through which you relate with the Antaryami inside. That is Nirgunam. And that's the only option you have in Nirgunam. Whereas Sagunam process, you have such a variety of forms for worship, Krishna's different forms for worship, different incarnations, different pastimes, chanting the holy name, and similarly, different mellows of relationship with Krishna, and different processes of bhakti. So if you take into account all these things, Sagunam is a much more variegated and diverse spiritual side compared to Nirgunam. And for ordinary people, Sagunam is the only process. Through Sagunam, if one progresses enough, one day he will become ready for Nirgunam as well, at some stage in life. It may not happen in one lifetime, but that Sagunam process, how one process progresses in Sagunam, is what is discussed in Kabilam. And if you understand all that, study that and understand what was spoken there, then you will see at what stage one move from Sagunam to Nirgunam. That's also spoken in the Kabilam. So if the question is understanding Bhagavatam properly, and it helps. So Saguna Upasana is a lot easier, where deity worship comes, temples comes. This is all a part of Sagunam it is. So, and some particular form one is attached to, worshipping that form. And that intense upasana, sadhana. But at some point in time, we will realize that the form what you are worshipping is present inside you as your Antaryami. That's the first stage in Sagunam. And later on, when you become further progressed in bhakti, then you will realize that your actual identity is not this jiva form. Instead, it is that Antaryami form of the murti, what you have been, what you are relating to. Saguna upasana, saguna murti. And that murti can be Krishna or Krishna's different forms, Ramachandra, or any of the incarnate, Narasimham, Shiva, Parvati, all of those forms are as Ishtadevada, what is worshipped inside as your murti. So that form you get attached to through bhakti, and that is Saguna Upasana. And eventually you realize that form inside is your own form. In other words, that you as Jiva now, through bhakti, when you have purified yourself, you realize that your actual identity is that form inside. Same as the Ishtadevada or Ishtamurti, what you have worshipped. It is there in the third canto. You can see that. And at some stage, that form will disappear. It's mentioned in the Kabbalah. You can read that. That form what you have worshipped all through your life, that form disappears from inside. And that is when you realize that Antaryami is your identity. And when that stage comes, you can say you have become free from the effect of Maya. Simultaneously with that, you become free from bodily identity. Both things happen at the same time. We will talk about that later. But now what it is that Krishna looks after that devotee. In Sagunam we are talking about all these things. Krishna is concerned about the devotee, and he will, once he has become the Ishtadevada form, has come inside, one should not stop his or think. Many times what happens is, when that form manifests within the heart, he gives up, thinking that now I have realized, it's not the end. And gradually, our subtle body will become that Ishtadevada's form. You see, subtle body is our main problem, isn't it? Gross body, it will drop one day and go. But the subtle body will go with us to the next body again. So if this, as long as we have a subtle body, what that means is you'll have to come back again with another body, another gross body. So when subtle body completely disappears, you can say that you have made substantial progress in spiritual life. When subtle body disappears. So the subtle body disappears means that subtle body, which includes these four, mind, intelligence, ahankaram and chittam, manasa, buddhi, ahankaram, chittam, all these four things are in the subtle body. That subtle body, due to bhakti, becomes one with the Ishtadevada form, what you are worshipping. So, that is why. And so worshipping or continuing this relationship in that way, that is what this first verse is talking about. Verse 20. Ekandino yasyana kanchanartham vanchandi evai bhagaval prapannaha atyalbudam da charidam sumangalam gayandam ananda samudramagnaha. So that is sagunam. Look at the next verse, totally different. Nirgunam it is. Next verse is nirgunam. Tomacharam brahmavaram paresham avyaktam adhyalmiga yoga gamyam adindriyam sushma mivadi duyam anandamadhyam paripurnamide. So you can see sagunam, nirgunam, both are spiritual life, both are part of spiritual life. You can't separate one from the other and say one is only one, I'll follow, the other one is against me, right? So in the second verse he said, right, so how devotees experience all these things? You remember devotee situation. This is what we are concerned about. How does a devotee face all these situations in life? Yudhishthira went to gamble, did he not? He went to gamble, right? And in that gambling, he lost everything, right? And he, along with his brothers and Draupadi, they walked away from the scene. So, and they had to go to the forest after that. Yudhishthira was always gambling. And we are talking about four regulative principles, not to gamble. And Yudhishthira was gambling. And Krishna says, Yudhishthira is my devotee. If you look at all that, when you read Mahabharatam and Bhagavatam, you will see a lot of interesting things like that. So, we keep insisting these four things very strongly, right? And we think because we are following four regulative principles, we are better than Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira couldn't even follow four regulative principles. That's the way you will say. But that is not how you look at Shastram. Yeah. In Shastram, so many anomalies you will find like this. All these personalities, they are all exceptional cases. These regulative principles are for ordinary people to follow. You should not use that as a standard to judge everybody on that basis. Like you can see in Ramayanam, there is instances Ramchandra has eaten meat. Krishna has probably eaten meat. But if you bring it that into our level and start judging Krishna and Ramchandra on that basis, then we will be confused about it. And that's why a lot of devotees have got problems with all these things. It was not unusual. When did this vegetarianism becomes very strong in the society? It's a new thing. If you go back into the Rishis' times, the Kshatriya kings always were hunting animals, killing animals. And even for Shraddha ceremony, they have offered meat. It's there in the ninth canto. Somebody fed Vasishtha with meat, and Vasishtha ate that happily. And so when you read all that thing, and then we are bringing about these four regulative principles and on that basis we are making judgments about them, then we could get into problems, right? Ramachandra, during his forest journey, even though he was a Kshatriya, wasn't he? Ramachandra was a Kshatriya. Krishna is also a Kshatriya, he is. So normally Kshatriyas had this nature, going to the forest, hunting animals. And also Kshatriya kings had to have that because they had to go to the battlefield fighting, and all that required a diet which was with the meat. And that was not considered wrong in those days, right? But then when did this come into the society? It came with Vaishnavism. When Vaishnava Acharyas came, they kept pushing about this, which is correct also, what they have done, in the sense that a diet has a substantial effect on the consciousness of a person. So therefore, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka Acharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all of them spoke about, Vallabhacharya also, all spoke about the necessity of a vegetarian diet and control of freedom from killing sinful animals unnecessarily, all that thing. It is the birth of Vaishnavism. And Vaishnavism started with Ramanujacharya, which is a recent thing. It didn't expect, probably from 11th century onwards till now. It was only in the last 700-800 years, through the influence of Vaishnavism, that vegetarianism became a part of the Vedic society. Otherwise, they were not so concerned about it, about vegetarian diet. Kshatriyas were allowed to hunt animals, killing animals were quite normal. Not only that, in Vedic sacrifices also, they killed animals. You know the famous Rajasuyam in the 7th canto talked about, Yudhishthira performing Rajasuyam. Animals were killed in the Rajasuyam. In the Rajasuyam sacrifice, Ashwamedham, if you take. And similarly, many other sacrifices, animal killing was allowed, and it is a part of the Vedic knowledge. It is, you can say, in the Yajnam, killing animals was allowed, and it was a part of that Yajnam. So you can't say that, but that system continued for a very long time, but in the recent times, the situation changed due to the influence of these personalities, Vaishnava Acharyas. Vaishnava Acharyas spoke very strongly against killing animals and eating meat. And therefore, today in the society, the influence of Vaishnavism is in this way. It has come like this. That is how it has happened. It's not an age-old, from time immemorial, from... You can see Parikshit went hunting. And the whole Bhagavatam is centered around Parikshit. Is it not? He went hunting. He killed animals. And then he got exhausted. And then he went and looking for some water. And then he went into the ashram. And then he saw Shamigha Rishi sitting there. And he found a dead snake. Took it out and put it on his neck. And then he walked out from there. So he was hunting for the animals. And so it is not an old thing, I'm saying, this that regulative principle, what we talk about now. It was an age-old thing that killing animals is not considered to be ideal for spiritual life, for spiritual advancement, especially for bhakti process. It is imperative that one follow the principles. It helps, right? So what you are talking about was Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira walked out with the brothers and the to the forest. They had to leave and they go to the forest, right? When they got into the forest, they started talking to each other. Who? The five brothers and Draupadi. They're talking to each other. You will see this in the Vanaparvam. Vanaparvam is one of the parvam in the Mahabharatam. So in that Vanaparvam, there is so many chapters. These brothers discussing each other. Why did this happen to us? Why did this happen to us? Right? And they are blaming each other that you did this wrong, that wrong and all. Right? So Yudhishthira, being the eldest brother, all the other four brothers accused him for losing the gambling. Right? So now you see, gambling was prevalent among the Kshatriyas. Killing animals were prevalent among the Kshatriyas. And having many wives were also there among them. So all this for Kshatriyas, it was all possible to do it. And that was accepted in the society in them days. Right? So Yudhishthira heard all that and he didn't say one word to anybody. They all blamed him. Draupadi blamed him. Other brothers also blamed him, right? So after all this blaming business went on, and whole Vanaparvam is all about this blaming. And finally, Yudhishthira didn't speak for a long time. Eventually, he replied in one or two verses what he had to say. He said like this. He said, my nature is like this, he said, that I know who Krishna is. Yeah, and I am happy as long as Krishna is with us. It doesn't matter to me what has happened in the gambling, whether we won or lost or all these things is not important to me. So everybody has a swabhavam in them, a nature in them. Yeah, and it is not possible to change that person's nature. Yudhishthira says, my nature is like this. I am happy if Krishna is happy with me. I don't care what others think about me or what else is happening in my life. It doesn't matter to me, he said. So, but my connection with Krishna is not that what Krishna does to me. It is just my nature itself is like that. I am attached to Krishna. I don't want anything else in life. I just want to keep Krishna happy. If something has gone wrong in my life, it doesn't matter. This is how Yudhishthira replied that to them. In other words, even though all these things happened in his life, he was not lamenting about it. He was saying that Krishna is happy with me, that's enough for me. I don't care what others think about me, right? And because Krishna is giving me some happiness inside, I don't bother so much about what else has happened in my life. And I enjoy that Krishna's attachment to me. And just like I am attached to Krishna, Krishna is also keeps me in his heart. He never forgets me, he said. Krishna has in several occasions shown his love for Yudhishthira in several places, right? So, and I know he has full confidence in me. And therefore, I don't get so affected by all these things, what happened in the gambling, right? So, so it is like that. According to our relationship with bhakti is like that. This is the beauty of bhakti. If there is bhakti in the heart, then that bhakti will protect from all other imperfections in us. We may make so many mistakes in life, like Yudhishthira did. If you keep Yudhishthira separately and start analyzing, Yudhishthira's life was full of faults. Many mistakes he did, right? But all those mistakes did not affect him. Why? Because Krishna was there in his life, right? So, on the one hand, as an emperor at that time, he had so much material facilities, right? He was an emperor and sense gratification was concerned. He had all the options to enjoy life, right? So, but he saw it in a different way. He thought that Krishna has put me here, and therefore still, in spite of the fact that he had that position, his attachment to Krishna was more than the pride that he had from the position what he got it, right? So he thought, Krishna gave me these opulences, Krishna gave me this position, and he was getting more pleasure from that of thinking about Krishna rather than all the position and the power and the sense gratification what he got from that. And that is Krishna consciousness. Look at his nature, Yudhishthira's nature, I'm saying. After all, they are great personalities, isn't it? They are all incarnations of Lokapalas they are. Lokapalas means Krishna's expansions to maintain this creation, universes. So all of them are Lokapalas themselves or the children of Lokapalas, like Arjuna is Indra's son and Bhima is Vayu's son. So they are all people, energies of Krishna maintaining this universe. Vayu is Bhima, isn't it? So in that way. So externally he lost everything, who? Yudhishthira. But he accepted that I lost it because I was useless in the gambling, right? I'm not denying that, he said. But in spite of all this has happened, it's not affecting me, my relationship with Krishna. That's more important for me, said Yudhishthira, right? And therefore, I am still happy. If Krishna abandons me, I am finished, he said. But as long as Krishna keeps me within his heart, and Krishna takes care of me, I am happy with that, he said. Right? And he said that I cannot do business with Krishna, he said. I cannot do business with Krishna. So, if Krishna does this to me, I will do this for him. This is not my relationship with Krishna. Whatever happens in life, as long as I can keep a relationship with Krishna, I'm happy with that. I'm remembering Krishna all the time, whatever happens in my life. And equally, Krishna has always shown to me the same attachment what I have got for him. And that's enough for me. This is Yudhishthira's response to all the criticisms what he got from his brothers and from Draupadi. So you can read Yudhishthira's mind from that. Is it not? Right? He says there, I don't do business with Krishna. Yudhishthira says, I don't do business with Krishna. That's not my nature, he said. I only know one thing, that I just like him. I just want to be I want to be happy with him. With his presence, I feel happy in this way, and that is my nature. So, this Ekanda Bhakti, what we were talking about, Ekanda Bhakti means this, that having a relationship with Krishna in such a way that under all circumstances, you feel shelter in Krishna, and Krishna feels that you are his devotee. Krishna has to recognize that. That is how you become a devotee. We can always say, oh, he's a devotee, she is a devotee, and all this and that, right? But actually, when Krishna says, you are my devotee, that's a special position, is it not? When Krishna says to us that you are my devotee, that is when you can say that you are a devotee. Till then you can't say that, because devotion depends on to whom you are devoted to. So if you are devoted to Krishna, Krishna should say that you are my devotee, and then you are a devotee. Up to that time, it's all just a rubber stamped devotee. You can say that I am joined the moment, I am initiated by this guru or whoever it may be. But Srimad Bhagavatam is saying to us, like Krishna says about Uddhava, you remember? Uddhava, you are my devotee, he said. There is no difference between you and me, Krishna says. Yeah. So you can understand from that, devotee is a very high thing. Unless Krishna recognizes us as a devotee, you can't say that you are actually a devotee, right? So, a devotee situation is like this. He is interested in Krishna. He wants to understand Krishna. And in the Bhagavatam, you will see both Vidura and Uddhava saying to us, nobody understands Krishna. It is so difficult. Krishna is beyond our understanding, right? But you can enjoy Krishna through Katha and through the holy name. Katha is the gross form. Holy name is the subtle form of Katha. Katha's subtle form is the holy name. That is why both Katha and the holy name are both equally important. So, so enjoying bhakti, bhakti rasa swadhanam, it's called. So, aswadhanam, that is possible for a devotee who has reached that level, right? So, when bhakti becomes very deep inside, and then you move from sadhana bhakti to sadhya bhakti, the next stage, and then finally comes parabhakti. So, sadhana bhakti, sadhya bhakti, parabhakti, in that way, right? Only thing is, what is required is the upasana has to continue all the time. Right? And upasana will bring all the three. Everything depends on the upasana. Right? So, we don't have to worry about that. So, when the upasana increases, eventually Krishna appears within the heart in the form of Ishtadevata, in the saguna form. And Krishna's manifestations first happens to the devotee within the heart. Right? And it is quite possible that when one is absorbed in that upasana, at some stage, that form will disappear from inside. So, sadhana bhakti is like that. Sadhana Bhakti initially comes in the form of appearance of Krishna's within the heart as Antaryami. So gradually it turns, and then comes Sadhana Bhakti, turns into Sadhya Bhakti. But when it comes to Prema Bhakti, this remembrance, Krishna's remembrance or experience of Krishna within the heart as Antaryami, that doesn't go away. It becomes continuous, right? And this is, if you want to understand this, you should read Bharata's story. You remember Bharata in the fifth canto? Bharata's story, if you read, you will find here. It's not only for Bharata. This is that progress of sadhana bhakti to sadhya bhakti to prema bhakti. How that develops, right? So, prema bhakti means continuously you are experiencing Krishna within the heart. Continuously. It will not go away. Even if you give up your other sadhana process, and if you are still quiet, sitting somewhere, still that remembrance, Krishna's remembrance is not leaving you. Krishna's presence in the heart, right? So, and it is sadhana bhakti turns into sadhya bhakti, later on into parabhakti, and finally it ends up in self-realization. What happens at that stage? At that stage, these two avidya, what has caught us, that means you lost your spiritual identity first, and then you identified with the body. Both these, avaranam and vikshepam, completely goes away from inside, and that is when you realize that your identity is not different from the Antaryami inside. Krishna inside as the Antaryami, and that Antaryami and me are non-different. And with that, the Jiva Bhavam also goes away. Jiva Bhavam also goes away. And this is what happened to Parikshit. And what we will do is, that fifth chapter of the 12th canto, which is called Aham Brahmasmi, realization, let us look at that chapter in detail during the 2 days we have in the we have booked for Janmashtami and the next day Vyasa Puja day. So those 2 days we have booked at the hall. I think we have booked at the hall those 2 days. So those 2 days we will discuss that chapter. And you will see the depth of that chapter. There is no other chapter in the Bhagavatam with such a depth. The knowledge of that chapter. If you go through that verse by verse, you will see how Shiva Brahmarshi has put Parikshit into this Aham Brahmasmi realization. How that happened to him. So, we may not get Aham Brahmasmi realization. That we will have to do sadhana for that. It's not going to happen otherwise. But on an intellectual level, you can understand what that all means. So which we will discuss at that time, right? So what he's saying here is that tvamaksharam brahmaparam paresham avyaktam adhyalmiga yoga gamyam atindriyam soshmam ivadiduram anandamadhyam paripurnamide. You see, you will see so many words used there. All talking about Krishna from a very subtle position. Adi indriyam. Krishna is beyond our senses, right? The problem with all of us is that we think that what we see through senses is the only reality. This illusion we have to get out from that first. Yeah? Because we are in the strong grip of the senses, right? That means senses are controlling us all the time. And we think what we see through senses is the only truth. And this is the biggest misunderstanding we have got. And this is a big problem to get over. You know what I'm saying? That we got so used to this thinking that senses and the knowledge acquired through the senses is the only correct knowledge. Everything else, this is the problem with scientists also. Scientists are not free from this problem. But Here he is saying here, Atindriyam. Beyond the senses there is a knowledge. And that knowledge is not accessible for the scientist. And that is why science is a failure. Science is a failure. Lord Brahma has to get over this senses problem. And that is why you remember when in the third, you'll see that in the second canto itself, when Brahma could not see Krishna, right? He went into meditation. What that all means? He is still in the grip of the senses. And finally when Krishna allowed him, that means he could not break through that covering of the Maya. Maya is a darkness. You remember he saw darkness at the end, he says there. What does that darkness mean? Maya. That penetrating through Maya was difficult for him. The rishis are saying to us that they were able to get through that Maya and then they realized this, what is Atindriyam means. CC has used that word there, Atindriyam. Sushmam, Ivati Duram, Anandamadhyam, Paripurna Mede. Right? So, the darkness in us is our vasanas inside, avidya inside us. Avidya has to go. Now, this is this interesting thing. Science doesn't believe in any of these things, right? For them, there is no mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance and all that. They think that Krishna should reveal to them because they are doing research. Isn't it? That's their approach. They are doing the research work, investigating the Prakriti, and they think by investigating the Prakriti, they will find the truth. That is their belief. That's all you can say. And till now, they have not come with any answer. And it will continue like they will never get it because it's not possible. It's only possible when we become free from the grip of the sensual world or these imperfect senses and come out of it and becomes Atindriyam, Sushmam, Ivadi Duryam, Ananda Madhyam Paripurna Mide. That is when you realize the truth. So when this experience of Antaryami inside becomes real for us, for a devotee, of course this is on a very advanced stage. We are the problem with most of all of us, I could say, that we are not doing sadhana. The so-called sadhana of 16 rounds and all is nothing. What is expected for these things to happen, right? So in this lifetime it may not happen because most of us are now 60 plus or 70 plus and there is not much energy left in this body to do sadhana. So sadhana is difficult now in this stage in life, but those who have spiritual life from the very beginning, their sadhana will be focused with this determination, with intensity, that they know that by a certain age that these vasanas have gone from them, and at the same time they will Krishna's appearance. When the vasanas goes away through sadhana, that is when Krishna manifests in the heart. As Antaryami's presence you will feel. So you can see this is a very higher step in saguna. In saguna upasana, at a very higher level of bhakti, Krishna's experience is felt within the heart, which happens in a much later date. So now you can see where we stand in the process, right? Even saguna upasana, we are on the lowest levels, right? So, and depending on the intensity of the upasana, then or how deep it is, that Krishna will appear in the heart, and that will gradually lead into the devotee will feel the bliss inside, right? And gradually he progresses from sadhana to sadhya bhakti to parabhakti, which will become prema bhakti, right? So, and this is called rasam. Rasam. It is called rasam. You remember rasa leela? Everybody talks about rasa leela, yes. Isn't it? What is this rasa leela about, right? So, experiencing rasam, bhakti rasam, is rasam. Experiencing bhakti rasam is called rasam, right? So, and in the pinnacle of bhakti, then he will actually realize the truth. And he will realize that he has nothing to do with this body, he is not this body, that avidya goes away. And he also realizes that he is not a jiva, that avidya also leaves him. So two avidyas have brought us into this situation. You remember from the beginning I'm saying, when jiva was born, how was the jiva born? Ahankaram with Paramatma Chaitanyam got together and jiva was born, right? So that jiva bhavam includes the two. We have to talk about this in detail, very much in detail. Only then you will realize that jiva is not a simple thing what we talk about. Jiva is a very complicated thing. So jiva at the moment is for us, it is ahankaram is there, which has come from maya, and paramatma chaitanyam, which has come from antaryami. So both combined together is what is called a jiva. And jiva has got these two problems. One, identification with the body. That is dehabhimanam, vyaktitvabhimanam, personality. All this is a part of the problem with the jiva. The other side, jiva has got the problem that he does not know his spiritual identity. Yeah? So ahankaram created dehabhimanam. And forget avaranam vikshepam, the two things again. Avaranam is the one which put the cover on us, on the spiritual identity, and we became, started thinking, we lost our connection with our spiritual connection. We lost it, right? So, then, what did he say? So, all these things will go, and then that becomes the final self-realized state. That's where it is, right? This is the beauty of bhakti. Bhakti brings to that level, gradually, through Sagunam process, with various options what we have got in bhakti, right? So, look at the verse. Ekandino yasyana kanchanartham vanchandiyevai bhagaval prabannaha atya albudam tacharidam sumangalam gayandam ananda samudramagnaha. Then, the beauty of that verse is that how bhakti brings us to self-realization. Bhakti can bring the... Krishna basically talk about three processes, right? Karma, jnanam, bhakti. But out of these three also, Krishna mainly targeted on jnanam and bhakti. These are the two processes Krishna has spoken. Karma, even though he is listed in the three, it's actually only a stepping stone towards bhakti or jnanam. Independently, what is capable of giving us the realization of self-realization is either bhakti or jnanam. Only one of these two. Not karmam cannot do it. Krishna himself says that later. Even though he mentioned karmam as a process in there. So, here also. So that ekanda bhakti. You see the word, yes, used there. Ekandino yasyana kanchanartham. That ekanda bhakti, what we spoke about it, right? So, for that requires Shravanam. Shravanam is the first thing for that. And seva to great personalities. All that will help to develop ekanda bhakti, right? All the bhakti sadhana is spoken in the 11th canto, in the 11th chapter. Different bhakti sadhanas, right? At the end of that, it says here, with all those sadhana, speaking all that sadhana, he says that we can only say with all this, you will develop bhakti, right? Then Uddhava is asking there, at that time, that what is that sadhana I have to do to develop this ekanta bhakti? He's asking there. All the bhakti sadhana is spoken in the 11th chapter, in the 11th canto. Bhakti sadhana is spoken, right? Ultimately, he will say, Krishna is saying to Uddhava, these processes what I have spoken, I can only say, it will develop bhakti in the heart, right? But If you want to develop ekanta bhakti, there is only one way, Krishna says, and that is satsangam. You can see that also there. If you read Krishna's verses or Krishna, what Yashoda has spoken, you will get this, right? So, if you look at that 11th canto, let's look at that, because we have to always go back and forth. Verse, if you look in the 11th 11 11 11 48, Krishna is saying prayena bhakti yogena salsangena vinodhava no upayo vidyade sadhrin prayanam hi sadamaha. He said, Uddhava, the bhakti what you will develop through salsangam, that bhakti is a final way to, no other way can develop the bhakti through satsangam will develop, right? Atha idat paramam guhyam shrunado yadu nandana sugopyam abhivakshyami tvam me brityo suhrat sakha. Krishna is saying to Uddhava that you are my best servant and you are my friend. And Sukhrata and Sakhava, both. Yeah? So, that is how that chapter finishes. So, in that chapter, if you look at that chapter from the very beginning, you will see there that the, from verses onwards, first he spoke about the karmam and everything, lot of verses you will see. And from verse onwards, 23 onwards, he is talking about how to develop bhakti in the heart. Shraddha alume katha shrunven subhadra loka bhavani gayan nanisparen karmam janmaja abhinayan muhu madarte dharma kamartham acharan madavashraya labhade nishalam bhakti mayuddhava sanatana. Then he says, salsangalabdhaya bhaktya mai mamya upasida savai me darshinam saddi anjasa vindade padam. So, like that, yeah. So, from then onwards, all the verses, if you look, you will see Uddhava is asking the questions, how do I develop bhakti? And you will see there that Uddhava vaja, how do I... what kind of bhakti will please you? He's saying, right? How, what kind of bhakti Narada and others execute? He's asking all that questions. You remember? Sadhu sadhusta uttama shloge madaki drigida prabho bhaktisto yubayujyada ki drushi sadbira avrda edanme purusha adhyaksha loga adhyaksha jagal prabho pranadaya anurathaya prabhanayaja kathyada. Those verses. Uddhava is asking that. How do I develop bhakti and what kind of person he should be? If you have to say that somebody is his devotee, Krishna's devotee, Uddhava is asking to Krishna, whom would you consider as your devotee? In other words, right? And what kind of bhakti will please you? And what kind of bhakti personalities like Narada Maharshi and others do? He said, yeah. So, in answer to that, Shri Bhagavan Vaja, you can read from that, all the verses, yeah? When you get home, you can read through. 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, continuously, all the way from 29, right up to 47, is all about how to develop bhakti. Krishna spoke about, right, how to develop bhakti. And at the end, Krishna said that, Uddhava, I have told you all these processes, doesn't mean that that is the best method. After saying all these things, he says to Uddhava, Uddhava, those things are there for developing bhakti, but none of them is as powerful as satsangam. That's how he concluded that chapter. You remember? 11th chapter, that's how Krishna concluded. after talking about all the bhakti sadhana process, from 29 to right up to 47, different bhakti sadhana processes he spoken, what all you have to do to develop bhakti in the heart. Yeah, and if you read through that, you will see that you may understand everything, because already that's your understanding also about the bhakti. Everybody understands bhakti in this way, what Krishna has spoken there, right? What all we have to do, it's all spoken there, what we have to do. And in that mentioned about initiation also, Vaidhiki, Tandriki, Diksha, Madhiya, Vrata Dharanam, Yatra, Balividhanam, and building temples, and Udhyanam, Udhyanobhavanam, Kreda, Pura, Mandira, Karmani, and everything is there in that verses, right? Mallinga Madbhakta, Janas, Darshanas, Parshanarchanam, Parijariya, Studi, Praha, Guna, Karmani, Kirtanam, Malkatha, Shravane, Shadda, Madhuna, Dhyana, Mudhava, Sarvalabhavaharanam, Dasya, Almani, Vedanam. So everything Krishna covered in that, all the bhakti sadhana process. And finally Krishna said, Uddhava, all this I have spoken to you, but there is one method which is more powerful than all these things. Prayana bhakti yogena, he says, sal sangena vina Uddhava, no upaya vidyade sadrink prayanam hi sadamalam. That the power of bhakti satsangam in bhakti yogam, power of satsangam is more than anything else. And immediately after that, the next chapter, Krishna began with that. You remember? Yeah. Shri Bhagavan Vaja, na rodhayati imam yogo, na sangyam, dharmam, evacha, na swadhyayam, tapasa, siyagam, ishtamurtam, dikshina. So, after all these things were covered in the bhakti yoga process, in the very next chapter, Krishna is saying, none of them are as effective, powerful as satsangam. That's how he begins. And then he says, he gave a list of people who escaped through satsangam. Satsangam is the best sadhana, if one can get it. More than anything else. There is no doubt about that. And that's what Krishna is establishing in that. And if you look at the list there, most of them has not done any sadhana. But through satsangam they escaped. Look at that. Sugriva. What Sugriva was drinking always. He was not, never did, you don't see any record of Sugriva doing any sadhana. Right? Sugriva had problem, but due to satsangam, Sugriva escaped. Anjaneya satsangam, Ramchandra satsangam. What more do you need? That was enough. Sugriva escaped, right? Hanuman, obviously. Riksho, Gajo, Grudhro, Vanikpatha. Yeah. So, even our Gajendra comes in this list here. You can see. How did Gajendra escape? Satsangam. So you can see here, to stress the importance of satsangam, Krishna has mentioned that. And if you follow that, and that is exactly what Kapila Maharshi is also saying to Devahuti. When Devahuti told Kapila Maharshi, I am an old woman, your mother, and I went through my life, all through my life, and it was not always very spiritual in that sense. After I got married to Kardama Prajapati, and then Kardama Prajapati understood that Devahuti wants to have a happy material life. So Kardama Prajapati created a lot of facilities for her, and they traveled together to all the different planets and all. It says in the third canto, Nandanam, Chaitraratham, all the big forests of the heavenly planets. And together they enjoyed so much time in that floating aeroplane which came from Vaikuntham for them. In other words, Devahuti had a very high standard of material life with Kardama Prajapati. And now she is exhausted completely, finished. All the energy is over, gone, and she is old. And now she felt that she has to ask Kapila Maharshi this question. So what was Kapila Maharshi's answer? Was that, my dear mother, for you now to do sadhana and all, it's a bit too much at this stage. Everywhere it is aching, all the body is aching. And she is struggling to sit there and to listen to, and doing sadhana and all is too much. So Kapila Maharshi understood that. So Kapila Maharshi said to Devahuti, that, but you are ready for spiritual life now. And that's what he says to her, the same thing what Krishna is saying here. Sadam prasangal mama virya sambido bhavandihirul karna rasayanaha kadaha tajoshanadashu apavargavarmani shraddha riti bhakti anukramishari. He said, so hearing about Krishna all the time and absorbing Krishna within is the best process, and that is satsangam. And all the other obstacles in life which is causing problems for us in developing bhakti will disappear with satsangam, right? So, and with that, what happens in satsangam is we lack faith in Shastra. Most of us do. We lack faith in the Shastra. We are suspicious about many things in the Shastra. That kind of uneasiness with Shastra will go. Initially it is like that. Everybody feels difficulty in accepting Shastra. Yeah? Because Shastra, the faith hasn't developed inside. It's not so strong. So with this, all such lack of faith in the Shastram will go. And then we don't have sufficient attraction for Krishna. We are just thinking Krishna is somebody who was here 5,000 years ago and he spoke all these things and he left. We don't know him. He doesn't know me. I don't know him. So therefore there is no relationship with Krishna. First thing, no faith in the Shastram. Secondly, no relationship with Krishna, right? And because there is no relationship, you don't feel like pleasing Krishna. The desire for pleasing is also not there. And therefore, you are busy with keeping your own life, personal life happy in your own way. We all think like that. That comes to us naturally. And that's how we become separated from Krishna. That means attachment for Krishna is not there. And no relationship with him. And because there is no relationship, there is no desire to do anything to please him, or seva for him is not there. And third, apart from that, there is no faith in the Shastram also. These three problems, lack of faith in the Shastram, lack of relationship with Krishna, and the lack of developing that relationship, these three problems will go through satsangam. That is what he is saying there. Shraddha, Rati, Bhakti. All the three things, right? So, and that is the beginning of Bhakti. That's the beginning of Bhakti. So, so if the if these three obstacles goes away from within, then one will get excited to serve Krishna. Somehow or the other, you will feel you have to please Krishna. That desire will come. Just like Yudhishthira was saying there. How Yudhishthira's heart, Yudhishthira is always thinking, how can Krishna be happy with me? So that means there is a relationship between Yudhishthira and Krishna. Isn't it? So all the obstacles for bhakti will, you can get rid of through satsangam. And that is the reason why they say, only through satsangam proper bhakti will develop in the heart. Right? And Krishna's, that is what he is saying here. Atya albudam, tacharidam, sumangalam, gayandam, ananda, samudramadnaha. So, that is how it develops. Sumangalam means one removes all the kalushyam. Kalushyam means that impurities of the heart, which includes, impurities of the heart means that the kamam, krotham, lobham, moham, madam, matsaryam. All these are the kalushyam. Kalushyam means that. Kamam, krotham, lobham, moham, madam, matsaryam. Now, these things is there in everybody. And because they are our main problem, that because it is there, we have no bhakti in the heart. Bhakti is not developing in the heart because of this. Right? So, but through hearing about Krishna, these things will go. These things will go. Provided if you keep taking it seriously, satsangam, and that's what satsangam does to a person. develops bhakti, and bhakti removes all these things. So this is the bhakti process. The jnanam process is that what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita about it. You remember Krishna has spoken many times about these things. How ragadvesham comes. And how contemplation on sense objects develops into these things. For example, Krishna is saying there that the dhyayano vishaya pumsan sangasteshu vajayati. That is jnana margam it is. If you contemplate on sense objects all the time, any kind of sense objects, sangam will develop. Sangam will come. Attachment will develop. Sangal sanjayate kamam. From sangam comes kamam. Desire will come. You like to have that. Kamal krodho bhi jayate. Kamam will lead into anger. Krodhal bhavati sammoham. Krodham, you know the famous verses. Krodham will lead into delusion. And sammohal smriti vibhramam. With that, you will lose your spiritual understanding. Smriti will go, you will become more and more identified with the body. Smriti bramshal buddhi nasham. Your buddhi has lost its capacity to discriminate. Buddhi nasham pranashyati. You will fall into the power of illusion, delusion, you will fall into that. So that is jnanamargam. By remembering these verses and applying that in your own life, keeping that focused on that all the time. That means jnanis generally have, they are very much on the guard of not getting affected by any of these things by their contemplation on this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. That's where they take shelter. Bhakti margam is hearing about Krishna and developing bhakti, and in that process all these things will go from us. So two processes, jnana margam and bhakti margam. In the end result is the same, but done in two different ways. Bhakti margam is through developing bhakti to Krishna. And Krishna's help, it gets rid of from inside. Jnana margam is one's own effort, but the knowledge given by Krishna is used to get rid of the impurities from the heart. Right? Then, so that's what he's saying here. That this atyalbudam tacharidam sumangalam, right? Atyalbudam tacharidam sumangalam. Look at the third line in the 20th verse. In order to explain that to more clarity for those two, atyalbudam sumangalam. In order to explain those two words is the 21st verse. More. It tells you about that is the next verse, right? So look at the next verse. Tum aksharam brahmaparam paresham avyaktam adhyalmiga yoga gamyam ati indriyam sushmam ivati duram anandam adhyam paripurnamide. Paripurnamide. Here, this 21st verse is more subtle than the first verse. First verse is little easier because it's more related to bhakti. But he used those two words there. Atyalbudam, he says. Krishna is an amazing thing. And his pastimes, tacharidam, Krishna's stories, sumangalam, gayandam, ananda samudra magnaha, that continuously hearing about Krishna puts a person into that state of consciousness where he is completely absorbed in Krishna and he is unable to move away from that. Samudra magnaha. He is immersed in the ocean of Krishna. Ocean of Krishna means it is a big ocean. Only thing is we are not getting that feeling for the ocean. This ocean, what ocean means is what we saw, Krishna's appearance in this world, Krishna's pastimes, that includes all incarnations as well. And they are all Krishna's what is called as vibhuti. Vibhuti means, one English translation is opulence, but vibhuti is a lot more than opulence. You see the problem, everything translation if you look, the English translation words cannot convey or cannot carry the actual meaning of that, what that word emotion, what that word should create within your heart is not created by the translated word. Yeah. So vibhuti normally is translated as opulence of the absolute. You can see the 10th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. It's called vibhuti yogam. Vibhuti yogam is the word in the Bhagavad Gita. The title of the chapter, 10th I think it is, is vibhuti yogam, right? And the title in English translation is the opulence of the absolute. Yeah. Now, opulence, if you say to somebody, what does that mean? Oh, he's got best clothes, he's driving a latest car, or he has got a big house to live, and he's going on holidays every year, and he's got plenty of money in the bank. That is what opulence means, isn't it? Generally, when you say somebody is opulent, what does that mean? It means all these material opulences. That's what it is referred to. But vibhuti is not that. But if you read the chapter, it doesn't talk about those things. It talks about completely different things of about Krishna. Is it not? It's vibhuti yogam it is. So vibhuti, you can see there itself, the translation is not able to bring about the actual meaning of the word vibhuti. Opulence, right? The opulence of the absolute. So this confuses most of the devotees who are not used to the terminology in the Shastram. So if you are only studying through English, it becomes difficult. So what happens is, they have been reading this for all these years and they are getting confused within themselves. Is this all what it means? It's not much of an opulence in there, spoken in that chapter. And we are calling it as the opulence of the absolute. It's the same problem with so many things in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. So till you get to understand what Shukha Brahmarshi is saying, what Krishna is saying at different times, and if you use the same terminology, and if you get a feel for those words, it makes more accessible to the experience of what Bhagavad Gita is expected to give it to us. Right? So that's what important. Now here, in the 21st verse, Tvam Aksharam, Brahma Param, Paresham, Avyaktam, Adhyalmiya Yoga Gamyam, Ati Indriyam, Sushmam, Ivati Duram, Anandam, Adhyam, Paripurna Mide. He said. So in the last verse, he talked about Ekanda Bhakti. Ekanda Bhakti, right? So Ekanda Bhakti, one who has got Ekanda Bhakti, he won't desire anything else. If you look in the Prahlada talks about this Ekanda Bhakti. If you look into the 7th canto, you will see what Prahlada had to say. In the 7th chapter, last verse, 7755. That is where the proper understanding of Ekanta Bhakti. Here he said, Ekandino yasyana kanchanartham vansandiyevai bhagavad prabannaha. So what is Ekanta Bhakti? He is saying here, Edavan eva lokesmin pumsa swartha parasmrada Ekanta Bhaktir govinde yad sarvatra tadikshanam. In Krishna, here is the word Ekanta Bhaktir Govinde, in Govinda. When one develops Ekanta Bhakti, Prahlada is also saying, when one develops Ekanta Bhakti, means seeing Krishna in everything. Seeing Krishna in everything. And able to see it that way, and able to offer obeisances to everything. So, you can see this Ekanta Bhakti is what Krishna spoke to Uddhava later at the very end. In the Ekadasha Skandam, at the very end, when he spoke about again Ekanta Bhakti is spoken. So, bhakti has got various types of bhakti. Sadhana Bhakti, Sadhya Bhakti, Para Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, and now we are talking about another term, Ekanta Bhakti as well. So, normally people are thinking bhakti is all same, we are all bhaktas, we have all got bhakti. and we are doing everything what we've been told. But bhakti is a very complex science, it is. Very complex science it is. And to understand the differences between these different types of bhakti. And again, if you take in the sadhana process itself, there is so many different types of bhakti, people follow that, is it not? So, try to understand from Bhagavatam point of view, Bhagavatam is not interested in the sadhana bhakti so much. Bhagavatam considers only this ekanta bhakti or parabhakti at a stage where one is able to see Krishna's presence in the whole creation. Creation is Krishna. It's not different from Krishna. It has come from Krishna and this is Krishna. What that means is, at the moment, in creation, we have Krishna is there, Maya is also there. Is it not? Satya Chitta Anandam, which is called Asti Bhadi Priyam, Namam Rubam. This is what this creation is. Is it not? If you look at it, Satchidanandam is there, which is Krishna, is present in everybody. In every living entity, Krishna is present as the life inside, Chaitanyam, living force inside, that's Krishna. And that Krishna's identity is Satchidanandam, Satyachitta Anandam. Then added to that, we all have this form, a form and a name, Namam Rubam. So these five things together is this world. World means these five things. Together. Satchidanandam and Namarupam. Satchidanandam and Namarupam. So out of that, now we are seeing only Namam and Rupam. Satchidanandam we are not seeing. Ekanda Bhakta, he sees only Satchidanandam, he doesn't see Namarupam. You see, that is what is called Ekanda Bhakti. That means, Satchidanandam means Krishna, and there is only Krishna here. Namarupam is not real. So, we have to move from this state to that state. And then, when that happens in us, then you can say, we have developed Ekanda Bhakti. So, there is a big thing. Satya Chitta Anandam Namam Rubam. Or Asti Bhadi Priyam. This Asti Bhadi Priyam is used by Vidyaranya Swami in his famous book called Panchadashi. I don't know whether you have heard about Vidyaranya, a famous personality he was. And there's a lot of history behind it. So Vidyaranya Swami wrote this Panchadashi book. In that he uses these three words, Asti, Bhadi, Priyam, Namam, Rubam. These five things combined together is this creation. Everything is within this five. The pure Chaitanyam is present and Namam, Rubam, that's what we are. All Namam, Rubam. We are focused on Namarupam at the moment. Our whole transactions, vyavaharam in this world, is based on Namarupam, isn't it? Different personalities who come into your life, family life, social life, political life, business life, everything if you take, it's all based on Namarupam. So when this world of Namarupam leaves us, and the world of Satchidanandam comes in, that is Ekanta Bhakti. Only in the level of Ekanda Bhakti you can deal with Satchidanandam, because Satchidanandam supports this world. Namarupam is the external thing. Namarupam comes from Maya. Satchidanandam comes from Krishna. And that is what they say, that Krishna supports this creation. Creation is dependent on Krishna. Namarupam is only a temporary thing. Namarupam by its very nature is temporary. It's not real. It's temporary. Satchidanandam is real. Real means it is the truth. Why? It doesn't change. It was never born. It will never die. It's not affected by time or space. These are all attributed to the Satchidanandam. Namarupam means it was created one day. It will die one day. It will exist for some time and therefore it's not real. This is the conclusion. That is how you understand that. Namarupam is what you call as Chaniya Pratibhasam. Temporary they are. It has no existence. For some time we were all here in this body and it was born at a particular time. It will stay like this for some time. Then it will get diseased one day. It will get sick and it will die and Namarupam has gone, finished. Namam is for the Rupam, isn't it? Name is for the form only. So that's why when Parikshit left this body, he said, where is Parikshit gone? They are asking. Now, which Parikshit are you talking about? Is that the body of the Parikshit or the real Parikshit who has gone? So, you can understand the problem that when the Aham Brahmasmi stage comes, all these things have become meaningless. So, with realization, what has to happen is, this Ekanta Bhakti takes us to that stage. So, that is why it's saying here. So, we'll continue with all that tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.